If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56david.com. Atlantic Coast Mortgage, Equal Housing Lender, NMLS 643-114.
This here's the story of Cassius Clay, who changed his name to Muhammad Ali. He knows how to talk and he knows how to fight, and all the contenders were beat out of sight. Sing Muhammad, Muhammad Ali. He floats like a butterfly, stings like a bee. Muhammad,
I'm gonna be honest. Let's all sing it. Let's feel it. The greatest of all time.
Oh my God, the greatest.
Catch me if you can.
You know this song? Have you heard this song before?
I have. I'm Mark Harmon. You're Craig Collins. Yeah. Part two.
Part two. I'm losing my words already.
Man, it is. It's borderline surreal to be here at 2:10 in the morning. The day after, I guess, Muhammad Ali
passed away,
74 years old, one of maybe the biggest sports icon this country's ever seen.
Yeah.
I mean,
easily when he was at his height, the number one most famous person on the planet, I would think.
Right. Yeah. I was saying there, this country, it's like he doesn't really belong to this country. He belongs to the world.
Yep.
And he has been battling for a long time, but that's not really what it's about. Like when Muhammad Ali, like that's before my time, right? I mean, I'm born 1973. I don't get to claim, like if Michael Jordan is talked about, I'll claim him all day.
Sure.
Muhammad Ali,
I've got
brothers that are 15 and 20 years older than me. That is their generation. That's where I heard about it. And we just have never had an athlete like Muhammad Ali, a boxer no less, who's on the stage by himself, who took on the Vietnam War, would not fight for this country.
Yep.
People hated him. People loved him. But back in the day, they despised this guy. He was braggadocious. He was out in front of you. He was black, and he wouldn't fight.
Right. He was the greatest. He would tell everyone, "I am the greatest." And I don't think there were a lot of athletes before him that would sit down in an interview and tell you that I am the best at this. No one is better than me.
Right.
Yeah.
And people are bothered by that today. You know.
Yeah. When LeBron does it, people still get upset.
Right. He did it when no one was doing that.
Yeah.
I mean, Joe Louis was the...
Well, and I'm thrilled you also mentioned the impact he had outside of the ring.
It's bigger than what he had in the ring.
I don't know if there... And again, this is all before our time, Mark. We both will admit that. And actually, Black Superman, the song that we bumped back with, was the first instance I found out who he was. I heard that song in the car as a little kid, and I was like, hey, who's Muhammad Ali? And then I looked into it, and he's amazing. But he transcended his sport, which I don't think a lot of people had done that. The interviews he gave, the conversations he had, went so far beyond boxing and had such a profound message that you either hated or loved, that his impact is so much more than just beating the crap out of people. And he relentlessly beat some people in the ring, just one of the best fighters in the history of boxing, but also, a political leader, so many other things that he did that we really have to just stand here and acknowledge now that he's passed away.
We do, and there's so much stuff going on as far as people weighing in with their, the great boxers of the world, politicians, the whole thing. I mean, Muhammad Ali connected with so many people. And one of the interesting stories for me is when I would, talk to people from that era, and they would be like, oh my God, I hated him. And then 20 years later, they were like, I feel bad that I hated him. But that was my reaction at the time. So I mean, sure.
I think that makes sense, especially if they had another boxer they liked. Boxing was the sport at that time too, wasn't it? It was the.
But he was more like they were hating him because what he stood for, like a powerful black guy at that time.
I know. Yes. No. I understand.
I mean, that's
that
what
part.
They hated. Like
I understand.
Ooh,
well, I think some people just hated him for being that braggadocious kind of guy that he was, no matter what. race he was. I think there were some people out there that just disliked how proud of himself he was and that he should be humble and beat people up and then say, like, I tried my best and I'm just lucky to win.
Yeah. Right. No, that, and that's all true. Hey, if you, 1942 to 2016, Muhammad Ali, 74 years old, greatest in and out of the ring.
Yeah.
If you were, I'm just curious, I'd love to hear from people that who were alive in his prime and saw him and had thoughts and perhaps didn't, and really didn't like Muhammad Ali and had a life epiphany. Craig.
I know you tend to go that way. You like to get the kind of the both ends of things. I also do want to hear from the people that loved him, the people that think he was impactful and amazing. 312-981-7200. We will take Muhammad Ali calls all night. We have other stuff planned, but with guests in studio, no matter what it is, you have to respect what he did for society, I think, and I think he did a lot. So let's talk about it. 312-981-7200, Muhammad Ali memories, anything.
There's one of his quotes. How would Ali have fared versus other heavy greats? He was asked this at one point. His answer was, I am the greatest. I said that even before I knew I was Muhammad Ali.
That is perfect.
I mean, how beautiful is that, right?
Yeah.
You know, his interviews, the way he would sit down with Howard Cosell.
Yeah. The Howard Cosell interviews alone, they were legendary in and of themselves.
That alone, you had this lunatic Howard Cosell, you know, who, interesting media personality.
Yeah.
Howard, like a lot of people don't know Howard's story as far as the fact that he struggled for a long time to ever get some national footing.
Yeah.
And then he just sort of became this character. This is how. And then, but Ali.
Do more. You only did a little bit. I need some more Howard Cosell.
This is Howard Cosell.
That's amazing.
And
that's
great. Sitting here with Muhammad Ali. Now, you've been very braggadocious. And, I mean,
I can't do an Ali, otherwise I would.
I mean, the two of them, what an odd pairing.
Yeah.
What a fantastically odd
Mark,
pairing.
We have some calls. You asked for them, and you shall receive. First, we have Beverly on the line. Hey, Beverly.
Good morning.
Good morning. You wanted to tell us what you thought about Muhammad Ali?
Oh, he was as Jesus. I knew no one who hated him. We loved him. We still love him. Because he was able to speak up and speak out, and it was wonderful.
I like positive things,
he loved
Beverly.
All over the world.
I love that message, but I have to agree with Carmen, believe that maybe some people did dislike him. I would assume that maybe your crew didn't, but
people of color.
Yeah.
People of color all over the world, we loved him. I don't
awesome.
Know anyone that ever hated him.
Beverly,
I feel you,
Beverly.
I play the race car and so forth, but
The race car's a huge thing with Muhammad Ali.
The time period when he was fighting, it was a giant, giant thing.
Yeah, and we're not playing the race car. We're just talking about race because.
I understand? Yes, but we loved him. I don't know any person of color that hated him.
No, I'm talking about white people, Beverly.
Mark is calling out white people.
I'm most definitely calling out white people.
Yeah,
and.
I know.
So,
but I just wanted to let you know.
Yeah. Well, what's one of your favorite memories, Beverly? Maybe an interview he gave or a fight, anything. Share something with us.
I remember we live in Evanston, and my sons were my oldest son is 49, and he was in Evanston at the store. In our neighborhood, and the children ran to him. They were able to meet him and talk with him, and they were so impressed by his size and his gentleness and his kindness and his rhetoric and what he had to say about mankind. And I mean, it was just wonderful, and it was just so wonderful, a role model for the young men.
I agree. I actually met him, too, and this is something I mentioned on Patty's show, and I fully agree with you that you see Muhammad Ali, you see the size of Muhammad Ali, but he's such a gentle, he was such a gentle, nice man.
Absolutely.
I sat with him for an entire baseball game. We spent nine innings together.
I knew his first wife.
Yeah.
I was working at a beauty salon in Chicago. I was a new hairstylist, and his wife used to come to the shop, his first wife. Mm-hmm. And I knew him. He would come and pick her up, and at the shop, I knew him at that time. So I throughout his entire career, when he came from Kentucky and when he was Cassius Clay, mm-hmm. and when he decided to change his name. And then, of course, during the Vietnam period, it was wonderful.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, Beverly, wonderful. We have so many other calls. I hate to cut you off. We just want to make sure to get to everybody tonight. Thank you so much for the call.
Goodbye.
In 312-981-7200, talking about the greatest Muhammad Ali, mm-hmm. Carms and Collins Part 2 with you till 5. And we can do a whole lot of this tonight.
Yeah.
So, listen, it's just there were, as far as like people of color liking Muhammad, there were a lot of people who loved Joe Frazier.
Sure.
I mean...
No, so, right. When you thought about it from a boxing perspective, I'm sure not everyone was a fan of him.
Right.
You're fans of other people.
And, I mean, he called Joe Frazier and Uncle Tom. I mean, that did not sit well with a lot of people. But he was, you know, and then and he felt in his later years, he felt bad the way he, you know, he, I'm going to kill the gorilla in Manila. I mean, there was...
Yes,
I mean,
sure.
That stuff is uncomfortable.
Right.
But
it's uncomfortable now. With you repeating it.
But that's what he said. And but that was competition. And he was crawling under his head.
Yeah.
Or crawling into his head.
Mm-hmm. Real quick, we have some more calls. We'll take one more, and then we got to take a break. But Jim, you're on the line with us. Hey, Jim.
Hey, how you doing? I grew up, I was born in 62, and I love Muhammad Ali. I actually owned the 45 that you were playing. And
I
met him a couple times. When I was working at the airport, I met him a couple times. He was the nicest guy, and I think what the record says, he floats like a butterfly and stings like a bee. He was always dancing around, you know, the ring, and then his face is so pretty you don't see a scar. That was the thing about being a boxer. You hardly ever seen him bloody. He never had a scar.
Right.
He was an awesome dude, and
he was hilarious too. By the way, let's just say how funny he was. Hilarious all the time when he said stuff like that, like you can't see no scars.
Jim, did you ever see him live?
Not fighting, but in the airport. Yeah, I met him a couple times. He flew out on an airline I used to work for that flew to Kalamazoo, Michigan, and he'd always sign autographs and talk to us and everything. And he sat down and take pictures with us. I met him at least 3 or 4 times. He was just an awesome guy.
It's very cool. Thanks, Jim. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much for the call, Jim.
312-981-7200. We're talking Muhammad Ali, if you're just joining us, passed away tonight, 74 years old. Been battling Parkinson's for many, many years and complications. He was in a hospital in Phoenix and with us no longer, but we're celebrating tonight. We're also celebrating you. We're also celebrating Carms and Collins. Eventually, we'll celebrate Roger Badish, too.
Sure.
Because, you know, you got to keep Roger Badish involved or else... Look at mad us. We don't want that. But Muhammad Ali, the greatest, passing away at 74 years old at 720 WGN.
All you fight fans, you've got to agree. There ain't no flies on Muhammad Ali. He fills the arena wherever he goes. And everyone gets what they pay for. Muhammad.
Yeah.
Was known to have said.
How about when he lit the Olympic flame, 1996, Atlanta, Parkinson's, standing up there. I get emotional with the Muhammad Ali, man. I really do. I don't know if it's where I'm at in tonight or whatever. It's been it's been quite a day over here, Craig Collins, I got to tell you. But Muhammad Ali is somebody who stood up for what he believes in the face of the world.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you have to have so much respect for a guy like that. And, I mean, he battled for oh so long. He's really just a tremendous, tremendous icon. 74 years old, 312-981-7200. Late 1963, Clay had become the top contender. He's going to battle Sonny Liston, who was just cracking people. He had Liston had the criminal past. He had ties to the mob. And at that point, he was Cassius Clay. And Clay started taunting him at the time. I love calling him Clay, Cassius Clay. Liston even smells like a bear, and after I beat him, I'm going to donate him to the zoo.
Right.
I mean, that...
Yeah.
I mean, that...
Well, and you go from that end or from the opposite end when he beats Foreman. Because there, again, is also that fight against Foreman that I've seen now several times on ESPN Classic. That is, it's the great kind of Rocky Balboa story of the guy that's maybe at the end of his career that still comes back and kicks the crap out of the kid. We have more calls?
The Rumble in the Jungle.
The Rumble in the Jungle.
In Zaire.
Yeah.
I mean, how awesome is that?
Seriously, they fought in Zaire.
Yep.
We have Susan on the line. Hey, Susan, how are you doing?
Fine. I just woke up and was listening to this, and I would never sit down and watch a boxing match in my life, but Muhammad Ali was a wonderful person.
Yeah.
And I'm a girl, and I don't watch boxing, but I'm 66 years old. I think I remember when he was Cassius Clay. But Muhammad Ali was a wonderful, wonderful man.
Beyond what he did in the boxing ring, he was just an impactful person to you. You were not a fan of boxing, but you liked him as a person.
I liked him as a person, and I remember he was in some international Olympics or something like that.
Yeah.
And that's why I remember he had Parkinson's disease. Yeah. And because I'm a therapist and I know what Parkinson's looks like. But Muhammad Ali, and I'm so glad to hear that he was against the Vietnam War.
For sure, Susan. Thank you so much for the call. That is absolutely. And Mark, you were mentioning that, the Olympic Games and what you saw there.
Yeah, and the Vietnam War part. I mean, the fact that I have got nothing against no Viet Cong. I mean, which, by the way, resonated with probably 75% of America at that point.
Yeah.
But it was also viewed as disrespect to the soldiers and to the war that we were fighting. The Foreman fight, one quote from that, Ali, if you think the world was surprised when Nixon resigned, wait till I whoop Foreman's behind.
Hilarious.
Is there anything better than that? He incorporates Nixon resigning and Watergate.
No, the guy legitimately could have been a comedian. He was that funny.
Man.
We got more calls. Yeah. Charlie, you're on the line with us.
Good morning. This is Charlie. How are you, gentlemen?
Hello,
good.
Charlie.
How are you doing?
Good. No, I just really want to follow up on when you said that he is really not just America's sportsman. He was the world's sportsman.
No doubt.
And I remember, I mean, I didn't really know him much well when I was a young kid. I was born in 66. But I remember growing back in Jordan, this was way before I came to the U.S., of how famous he was. And I remember one day, my dad said, oh, the fight is tomorrow. I was a kid. I was like, what fight? He goes, tomorrow morning at 5 a.m., Muhammad Ali is playing, you know, the boxing match. And I was a little kid, and I'm like, why would they play a boxing match at 5 o'clock in the morning? Not realizing the time difference between, you know, Jordan and here. And then, you know, as I grew older, I met him here at the Mosque Foundation one time. And as cocky as he was when he was young, this man was so humble at this older age. So he's really one of the greatest.
And amen, Charlie.
He was known all around the world.
Right.
No, not yet. Thank you, Charlie.
Thank you.
I mean, there's pictures of Muhammad Ali at the Oval Office. He's with Ronald Reagan, you know, 1983. I mean, think about that. He was a draft dodger.
Right.
And then
he's invited to the White House.
Yes, by a Republican president. I mean, put that all together and just think about that.
Yeah, the impact that he had is indescribable.
Baby, don't you wanna go?
WGN Radio, this is Carms and Collins, and I'm very excited about what we're about to talk about, Carm, because I don't know when the last time you went on a tour of Chicago was, but it's been a while for me.
I go on a tour every day, Craig. I do my own Mark Carman tour of the city, which includes running random...
You go on a one-man tour that you give yourself.
Yeah, I go 3 miles over the speed limit, and then I get a ticket in the mail.
What kind of facts do you tell yourself on this tour?
I tell myself that it's just great to contribute to a city that has no money.
Nice.
Therefore, I'm gonna drive a little bit over the speed limit so I can pay $35 for doing that.
So you spend political. I wonder. Yeah. We have our expert in studio. Oh. Patty Swanson is here from Chicago.
Wait,
full Chicagoans.
I got one more dig. I'm sure I'm creating a terrible.
No, go ahead.
terrible safety hazard by going 33 and a 30. I should have to pay that ticket.
You for sure.
Okay, now we can bring in Patty Swanson, who is
Patty, do you usually spin political and then also talk about minor traffic infractions when you do your tour?
Not traffic infractions. I don't drive.
Okay.
But I do like to slip in some subtle Chicago humor.
Nice. Take a few jabs.
Yeah. My tour so far in Albany Park, actually, we talk a lot about sewage in Chicago and how occasionally it ends up in the river.
And you can smell it, probably.
Yeah. Know, it happens.
And you probably shouldn't swim there.
I live right by Albany Park, Patty. I'm basically in Albany Park, but I say that I live in Lincoln Square because Lincoln Square is a cooler neighborhood than Albany Park.
Yeah. Where I disagree, but I respect your opinion.
Doesn't sound like
you
really
does. I think more people know Lincoln Square.
Right. Well, Lincoln Square resonates with like the cool hip kids. And I'm,
yeah,
that's true. I'm trying to shoot for that, even though I'm rapidly aging past the cool hip kid.
Nobody
Albany Park is a beautiful neighborhood,
cool,
too, and I basically live there. I mean, like, if you're on one side of the river, you know, you're in Lincoln Square.
Yeah,
but if you're I just look at the river, and I occasionally do walk over the river to the Francisco Brown Line stop. This is a little bit too much more about me. Yes, well, what did I just do wrong?
I encourage you to walk all around the Francisco Brown Line stop and
maybe even
cross
walk
the river
with
more
Patty.
Often. Yeah, yeah, come walk with me.
Yeah. She'll have facts. She'll have information.
Yeah, so many things you didn't know about Albany Park.
What would I learn about Albany Park if I walked with you?
You would learn a lot of things. You would learn that Albany Park contains Chicago's one and only waterfall. It's actually
can't be true.
Majestic.
It's actually a 4.5-foot drop over a spillway, but it's still the only waterfall in Chicago city limits. You know, it's a pretty flat part of the the world.
No disrespect to Albany Park, but Albany Park is most definitely an ugly part of the city. And, you're talking about waterfalls.
She's finding the beauty. She's finding the beauty.
Yeah, it's you can hop over to River Park in Albany Park, 30-acre park.
River Park is beautiful.
It is. It is. Truly, when you're in River Park, you don't feel like you're in Chicago anymore.
River Park, though, extends for like miles and miles.
It's 30 acres, specifically.
You do a walking tour of that?
Yeah. Okay. I've been doing walking tours of Albany Park. Nice.
Albany Park is allowed to claim River Park, huh?
Yes.
It's a huge claim for Albany Park. They're like,
we'll take it.
Yes. I mean, that's a big time. Okay, go ahead, please. I'm sorry.
No, and you were saying that your Albany Park tour might be sold out. But you do have other tours coming up.
It is currently sold out, but I'm planning on scheduling some more Albany Park tours this month because I've had a huge amount of interest.
That is unbelievable.
Yeah, right. Okay,
Mark
so
is dumbfounded
I did an Albany Park tour because it's my neighborhood. I love it.
Yeah.
Found out my grandfather was born there.
Oh, no.
I was expecting 10 people to come and they all be my friends.
Yeah.
I gave my first tour today. 21 people came. They were all strangers and they all lived in Albany Park.
It's because that makes sense.
People really want to learn about it.
And again,
it.
Also, that's the premise that you're doing that no one else is doing, which is very unique. You want the people who live in these areas to come learn the history of where they are.
Yeah. Learn about your place in space.
Yeah.
That's what I'm trying to say.
How did people find you, Patty Swanson? This is your first ever tour
of
Albany Park that no one in the world has ever been on a tour of Albany Park. I just got to call it as I see it. And that's really never happened.
And you had a sold out.
And then you had a sold out tour.
I've been in Albany Park.
Have you been on a tour, Badish?
Yeah, Badish,
I've been through
tour.
My grandparents lived in Albany Park.
Didn't answer the question.
Yeah. Yes, I've been on a tour in Albany Park.
So I actually.
No way.
I have. I swear to God I have.
Patty is trying so hard to answer this question. Go ahead, Patty.
No, I just chose Albany Park because I live there and I thought it'd be quick and easy. But there's actually a really awesome history there. And I think people are really interested to learn about even the less popular neighborhoods, you know, not the flashiest neighborhoods. You know, people live all over the city.
Well, and she was featured on DNA Info and then
That's
she blew
true.
Up all over the place.
Yeah.
So Patty is all over the place right now. You can go on the internet, punch in her name. You're going to find a bunch of stories.
Well, that may or may not be true, but if you Google Chicago for Chicagoans, that's the name of my tour company. You'll definitely find us.
Chicagoforchicagoans.com.
Weebly.com.
Patty.
Haven't paid for that domain name yet.
Patty Swanson, the one woman force behind the tours, cut her teeth as a guide with the Wendella Boats at Chicago Greater Program.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I intend to develop the service into a very collaborative endeavor. So my next tour, which still has spots open, it's July 9th. It's going to be of Boys Town, the Boys Town neighborhood, and it's with queer lady activist Andy Meadows.
Cool.
She studied a lot of Boys Town history, so we're going to take a kind of queer lady perspective on Boys Town, which is a history that's not really talked about. So
yeah,
that's going to be July 9th. It's going to be really awesome, super unique. So
and eventually you're going to get to all the neighborhoods. You're focused on trying to get everywhere.
Yeah, yeah. I'm actually booked up through December with collaborators, which is really exciting.
Every tour you're giving, you have a different collaborator on?
Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
It's
That sounds like a lot to manage, to be honest.
It's going to be exciting.
Now I'm getting to the point where I just wonder, why can't I think of cool things to do with my life that could just end up making me rich, too? You're from Texas, though, correct?
I am. I grew up in Texas. My dad's family is from Chicago.
Okay.
Well, Des Plaines.
That's not Chicago, but go ahead. Keep going. That's fine.
Yeah. No, but I actually grew up in Texas. I moved here for school. I went to school at the Art Institute of Chicago, otherwise known as the school that gave Kanye West an honorary doctorate.
That he deserved, question mark. And you've always just been really interested in Chicago history? Is that something?
Yeah, it's such an amazing city. You know, modern architecture really started in Chicago. And still today, you know, we have the architect that's designed the tallest building in the world and the future tallest building in the world is Adrian Smith, who is a Chicago architect.
See, now I'm learning stuff.
Chicago's a big deal.
What's the difference between obviously there are stark differences that are easy to figure out, but you did the Wendell boats and now you're doing a walking tour. So what's the difference between doing a tour on a boat where you're rolling around and maybe people aren't listening as much to when you're walking in kind of a small group of people?
The nice thing about giving a walking tour is you can change it at any second.
Nice.
The river tour is the same every day.
Yeah. So that gets boring for you.
It doesn't get boring. It is.
It's lovely.
Subject to change.
Yeah, okay.
But it's really nice having control over your own tour.
So, you know what goes on in these tours? A lot of people, they bring dates, Patty. Like they're
I'm all about it.
Right? I mean,
bring your Tinder date to my tour.
That's what I'm talking about.
It's J date for him, but that's the same thing.
Absolutely.
J swipe. Thank you very much for getting my personal life into the conversation.
Hashtag the karma, J swipe.
Hashtag.
You ever been on Christian Mingle?
No, but I'm thinking about doing farmersonly.com.
Oh, yeah. Farmers Only. That's where it's at. I'm
really excited about that.
It's Illinois. You're in the right community.
Exactly.
I mean, I think you should like also sort of maybe get, maybe you can be like a wedding counselor too or something. I don't know. There's like a lot of things that you could, you're going to meet some interesting people is the point that I'm getting to.
Well, no, and I think you said, she can steer into the romantic aspects of it. If you have sort of a romantic tour going on, maybe have some people behind you singing something of some kind, maybe take a couple of the tour people off to the side and go to some sort of restaurant thing. I don't know.
Yeah, we're doing that. After tour.
Nailed it.
After every tour, we're going to restaurant. It's really important to me to also kind of develop this community aspect. You know, the thing with tourists is that they come here and then they leave, right?
Yeah.
But if I'm giving tours to Chicagoans, why not they meet each other? You know, it sounds really silly, but like it's really hard to make friends as an adult. So like come on a tour, meet some cool people, add them on Facebook, become friends.
And you never
develop
know
where, a community.
Right. You never know where it's going to come from. You could be on the Patty tour and then you could meet a Patty or a Patricia or whoever.
Or anyone without a middle-aged lady name.
Right. Or a Bob.
Right. Maybe Bob.
Yeah,
Maybe we could get somebody cool like a Travis.
So wait, then you're talking about doing like a singles tour where you said everybody has to be a single, they all go.
You know,
that sounds
at this
fraught
point,
with some
possible.
Kind of difficulty.
Right.
Everybody's single on tour and we're all walking around learning the history of Chicago, eventually people are not going to be paying attention.
Yeah, you know, whatever.
In a successful world, yeah.
Well,
that's fine.
But everybody's in their own world. Like some people might be looking at the different landmarks and some people might be focused on who's on the tour.
Looking at each other.
Right.
That's fine. I'm okay with that.
You mapped out this tour tomorrow, right? Because you don't want people to be tired and whatnot. So you've actually walked it yourself. You know exactly what's going to happen.
I walked it myself last weekend, and then I walked it today as my dress rehearsal tour, which I had to open
to the public
because I had so much interest for tomorrow. Please don't come tomorrow. I have too many people. I'm so excited. What a problem to have.
Yeah. You're leaving from the Brown Line station at Kimball?
Yeah.
So what happens if you get like randos who just like kind of just see the tour and like
I actually, so the tour I gave today, there was this couple with a baby and they were there and we found them in River Park and I said, hey, this is an Albany Park walking tour. You want to join? and then they followed us the rest of the tour. Yeah, it was great. That's what I want. You know, I had all-inclusive.
Love her.
I'm actually really
curious, though, because if people keep getting added as you go, some people might get finished with the tour because they started with you.
Yeah.
But the people who just joined in, they're going to want an hour more of tour.
Well,
if you do this, eventually you're going to go from the north side to the south side just picking people up for a Chicago tour.
You know, that's a dream, but I'm trying to not be too optimistic yet.
I want that. We're doing the longest tour ever with Patty.
It'll be cool.
Let me just throw a little public service out. So you do, by accident, join Patty's tour. you owe
her money.
You owe a gratuity at the end.
It's okay, no. You don't owe anything. So it's a pay what you can service.
This is
It's really important to me that people be able to come learn about their neighborhood without having to pay. Mm-hmm. You know, this information should be freely accessible. So it's pay what you can. I suggest a $10 tip at the end of the tour, but that is completely optional. I just want people to come. I want people to come learn about their neighborhood. That's the most important thing to me.
That's so interesting to me, too. I saw that part in the story that it's a pay what you can kind of tour.
Yeah.
And people are doing pay what you can for CDs and stuff now.
Famous coffee shops. Yeah,
all this stuff.
Panera has a pay what you can restaurant.
Yeah. I feel like there's no risk. You don't have any sort of worry that maybe you're going to get a group and get $10.
Might be
whatever.
It might be the most adorable thing I've ever heard.
Yeah, really, seriously.
Just pay what you can.
You know,
and she'll pick people up as she goes. Whatever.
You know, so I actually volunteer for Chicago Greeter, which, if you don't know about it, it's targeted towards tourists, but it's partnering tourists with locals and taking them on tours of the neighborhoods. And I do that for free. You know, we don't take tips for Chicago Greeter. So this is something that's kind of like evolving out of that. Like, okay, let's target not tourists, but like people that live here. Tourists are obviously welcome to come, but you know, trying to bring that same kind of attitude to the people that actually live here.
So you're just bringing goodness to the world, and you're open to what will all come back.
Yeah, it's fun. It's fun for me. I like educating people about history because I'm a nerd like that.
Do you have a regular job too, or do you
I do.
That's unfortunate.
You know.
But hey, well, that's
I started this company 2 weeks ago. So.
Right. No, and it sounds
I'm not
like
ready
you really,
to quit my job yet.
It sounds like you really like it. It sounds like you really love what you're doing. And so in that regard, even if you do get a tour with 10 people and no one gives any money, you're fine with that, apparently.
Yeah, no, totally. I mean,
but again, another PSA
anyway.
For all the WGN listeners, do give her $10.
It's nice. You know, it helps me. You know, I paid myself $50 today, put the rest back into my business.
Nice.
And that's a good feeling.
Yeah,
but...
and if you can afford to flip a 20, listen, come on. I mean,
just come. Tell your friends, you know.
And if you actually show up single and you wind up with a girlfriend by the end of it, give $100.
That's 50.
That's 100.
Okay, but like you better tell me so I can write about that on my website.
Okay,
like...
good.
We got to bring in Roger Battis, the director of Genius. Roger, is it Albany Park or
Albany Park?
Or Albany Park?
From the
Albany
224, Park. We get a text message saying that they think that there's some sort of discussion here and it needs to be resolved today on Carms and Collins. We need to resolve this fight once and for all in Chicago. Is it Albany or Albany Park?
Albany.
All right.
Thank you.
Roger says Albany.
Would you, Patty, do you want to dispute that?
So Albany Park was actually named for Albany, New York. One of the initial investors and developers in what became Albany Park was from Albany, New York. And it's Albany, New York. So it's got to be Albany Park.
Fair. Okay. All right.
Done.
So you're going, like, give me some cool restaurants in Albany Park.
You got to go to El Magote. That's my favorite. I went there 3 times in a row when I moved to Albany Park. it's like Big Star off Damon. You guys
know
that?
Yeah, of course.
That sounds great.
That's where all the cool kids hang out. That's why I like
to go
there.
But it's, you know, it's half the price. Oh. So it's, you know, it's worth the trek. Also, Nuno Kebab. That's a, quote, destination restaurant for Albany Park. It's Persian. It's really good. I recommend it.
What makes it destination?
That's what the Chamber of Commerce says, man.
Cool.
You just dropped a little Persian, which made me think of Trading Places and Eddie Murphy and saying this rug was from Persia, which is not a reference that the people that I'm trying to be cool with would get, but yet a great moment in movie history. What else you got? Where is there? Give me another hidden like gem spot that I could walk
into.
Well,
and she's a tour guide a whole lot of places, so it doesn't just have to be in the Albany
Park.
That's
true. That's true.
Give us a hidden spot.
You know, I know the way you want me to answer this question, but I'm going to answer it a different way.
Okay.
Which is that I think the most important thing when you're in a neighborhood in Chicago is to look up. You know, I walk by the same storefronts every day on my way home from the Kimball Brown line to my house. And it wasn't until I started studying Albany Park that I realized if I just looked up past the modern storefront, this building was super beautiful and cool and old. You know, so look up as you walk through your neighborhood, like find what's cool.
Mark, that was so much more inspiring of an answer than either one of us was expecting. Like, yeah, we got to look around, notice stuff. That makes sense.
Yeah, notice things.
Right.
What you're saying is that society is awe deprived. So that's what I'm hearing. You want them to look at not only do you want them to look at the buildings and the beauty there, but you want them to see the sky. You want them to see the trees. No, not at all.
Maybe you want them to put down their smartphones.
Really, literally, just look up. So a lot of buildings in the city of Chicago are what's called a two-part block. You got the residences up top, and you have the storefront down below, mm-hmm. right? The thing is, the storefronts have been modernized. So when you walk by in the street, you see all these like glass storefronts. But if you look above, you see the residential section, and that's where the architecture has really been preserved. So if you just literally look up past the glass on the storefronts in your neighborhood, you will see so many beautiful things.
I feel like you just walked down the street yelling this at people. I can see it.
I don't.
Look up! Everybody look up right now.
No, it wasn't until I started studying Albany Park a few weeks ago that I looked up for the first time past the Interstate Blood Bank on Lawrence and was like, oh, wow.
Oh, my God, there's history here.
Yeah, like that building, it's called the Fish Furniture Building. It's super cool. I literally never noticed it because the only thing I ever saw were like all the sketchy people waiting to sell their plasma at the Interstate Blood Bank.
Yeah.
I never looked up at the building.
Tell me honestly, I am curious, when somebody walks down the street using their cell phone, how mad does that make you? That has to make
you
upset.
It's fine.
Okay,
whatever.
She's too nice.
People,
is the pink ice cream place on Lawrence any good? Because I keep like
pink ice cream.
You know what I'm talking about? It's on the.
Is it good for a date? I think is what Mark wants.
Well, it's on the north side of the street on Lawrence, right around like say Sacramento, and I see people in there all the time. But to me, it looks just absolutely awful.
Look. There are some really cool like ice cream shops in Albany Park. Honestly, I don't go there too often. I go to Fruity Land, which is on Kedzie, just
Fruity
south.
Land? That sounds lovely.
I think that's the name of it.
Yeah, sure.
Just south of Lawrence on Kedzie. It's across from Andy's Fruit Ranch, which is my grocery store.
I love Andy's Fruit Ranch. That's a solid ranch.
It's quality. You know, I like my grocery stores with like a severe ethnic confusion.
Yes.
Place is the most colorful ice cream shop I've ever seen in my life. They have neon everything, colorful everything. You see ice cream bowls, you're like, what? I don't even know what that is.
Are they
bedazzled? Let's order it.
Are they bedazzled ice cream bowls?
I mean, you know,
I would hope so.
Just different combinations of the same things, but they make it sound so exotic.
Mark, any other suggestions you want to ask her for your next date in Albany Park? Where does he start? Where does he end?
Where
that kind of
start?
Stuff.
I believe there's also like a great Chinese place right by the Kimball Brown line. Is there not?
Oh, you're talking about Great Seas.
Yes, Great Seas.
This place, okay. I went with my friend Andy, who I'm giving this Boys Town tour with next month. And we went and we ordered fried rice. And then we looked around us and everybody was ordering chicken wings. And we're like, oh, we messed up. I mean, the fried rice was really good, but like that is apparently the place to go for Chinese style chicken wings.
Wow.
Great Seas Chinese.
Yeah, I know people that travel across the city.
Yeah, across the city for it.
To go to the old Great Seas. I live right by there. I've never been to the Great Seas.
You gotta go.
But I gotta go. That's the move.
You got a $20 credit card minimum though. Bring cash.
That's good
knowledge. That is good
right
to know.
There.
That is very good to know.
Full of good facts.
What time does the tour kick off tomorrow?
It kicks off at 1.
But it's sold out, so don't go to it.
But we are sold out
tomorrow. Please don't show up tomorrow.
I'm planning on offering another Albany Park tour next week. So, I gotta get around to planning it a little. But, stay tuned. Like us on Facebook. It's called Chicago
reserve,
for Chicagoans.
People reserve on Facebook. Yeah. They RSVP. Yeah. How do they do that?
To RSVP, you go to the Facebook event, and there is a link to the RSVP. So
nice.
That's going to be through Eventbrite. But there'll be a link to it on the Facebook event. That's kind of the way to let people know things are happening in 2016. Right, so
if I show up tomorrow, I'm going to go hat, sunglasses,
umbrella. It might thunderstorm tomorrow.
Is that right? I'll be incognito. You will not recognize me. And then at the very end of it, I'm just going to come
he's
up.
Also, off your sunglasses, give me $10, and give you a hug. Thanks,
say,
man.
And say, Patty,
he's also going to join the tour 10 minutes in, just to let you know. He's not going to start at the beginning.
Good luck finding us.
Oh, I'll be peering you from like the subway across the street.
Okay, Mark's gonna be stalking Patty tomorrow. Right. Now we know. Cool.
Excellent. That makes me feel safe.
I mean, well, I'm a friendly fellow.
Fortunately, there's gonna be 50 other people on the tour that'll back me up.
Mark stalks like a friend. That is totally different. It's stalking. It's very friendly stalking.
I thought this would be exciting that I wouldn't be called a stalker, but apparently I'm a stalker. Congratulations, Patty.
Yeah, congratulations,
yeah,
Patty.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you guys so much for having me on.
Please check back in with us. We don't know when we'll be on again, but...
oof, rough.
Good morning. Carms and Collins, part two. I'm Mark Carman. He's Craig Collins with you till 5 a.m. Maybe we'll get to do crosstalk again with Orion Samuelson.
I'm excited about that.
I mean, I took my shirt off last week for crosstalk. You took your pants off. And
yeah,
everything
I did.
Else.
I did.
It was talking to a
he's
legend.
Big O. How do you, yeah.
And right, which doesn't, you know, you just don't get to do that every day, a little crosstalk with Big O at 5 a.m. So you should be back. You should stay tuned for that moment in time, which is an hour and 50 minutes from now. Craig, I got to have a little cathartic moment with you right now.
Sure.
Had a big opportunity tonight. It was the second
the tennis thing.
Yes.
Okay.
It was the second round of the prestigious East Bank Club tournament. I had won my first round match over Mahmoud.
I remember you mentioned this last week. You did a comeback. There was a comeback victory.
Well, it was a comeback in that I lost the first game and then I beat him 6-1, 6-0 and wiped Mahmoud off the court.
The greatest.
Yes, and I was playing a guy tonight, Joaquin.
Okay.
Who I have beaten, but then Joaquin had rose up on me. And the last time we played, he just smoked me in a different, just a one set type kind of mixed, and he just beat me 6-0. It was embarrassing.
So this is three sets. This is the best.
Tonight is if you split the two, then you play a 10-point tiebreaker.
Okay.
First set. I walk on the court, Craig. I'm telling you,
is there any kind of music we can play under this? Is there some sort of like really inspiring? Give me something from Rudy. Give me one of the Rudy songs. Go ahead, keep going, Mark.
So I was covering the Cub game today for the station.
Sure.
I'm looking in the eyes of a Chris Bryant and Anthony Rizzo. I'm trying to I'm trying to just somehow
to soak a little of that in.
Right. I get there. I'm like walk on the court with a presence because I wanted to instantly let Joaquin know that I was in there for business. So I came out. I had the towel on the shoulder. It's like a boxing match.
Okay.
And I mean, I was ready. So I walk out there. How are you? Because we know each other. I mean, it's a legit rivalry at this point. Very small rivalry, but yet a rivalry. First set, Craig. I'm up 4-2. I'm feeling good. I'm in there. I'm not thinking about my life. I'm not thinking about the show. The only thing I'm thinking about is that damn tennis ball. I am
laser focused.
Yeah, I mean, this is it. And when I have a point that I don't win, you know, I take a deep breath. I said, all right, we're gonna get the next one.
You let it go.
That's right.
Wow.
I mean, I maybe mourn it for a second, but
are you a guy that ever throws a tantrum? Are you a McEnroe ever?
4-2, 4-3,
okay,
4-4,
okay,
5-4 me.
Yep.
5-5.
No.
5-6. 7-5 lose.
Wait a minute.
Set.
I think I heard it.
Yeah.
Did we get a little Rudy going?
So I lose the first set.
Ooh.
I don't lose myself. I don't have tantrums. I was very calm. But when I lost that last point of the first set, I did take my racket and whip it against the back wall.
Sure.
That happened.
That happens.
That never happens for me. But that happened. So then I just walked over calmly, picked it up, said, you're okay. You're fine. It's a boxing match. You just delivered a lot of body blows. You're going to be okay.
A lot left. There's a lot of game left.
We're going to get the second set. We're going to win this 10-point.
Sure.
First game of the second set, go down 0-1.
That's not good.
No. Go down 0-2.
That's not a good start.
Now I have the thought creeps in my head. Are you going to get bageled here? Are you going to go down 6-0 in the second set? But no.
You did not get bageled.
I did not get bageled.
Thank God.
2-1. 2-2.
Okay.
Carm goes up 3-2.
How are you feeling at that moment? Let's go ahead and break it down. How are you feeling when you got up 3-2?
I had switched at that moment to the, let's get a little more verbal. Let's get a little more celebratory.
Sure.
Let's
rub it in. Let's get in his head.
Yes. So I started giving the commands. Come on! Let's go! Let's do this. By the way, I understand it's 3:13 in the morning and people are laying in the dark in their bed, but that's...
No, it's fine. You really get into it if you want to get into it.
I'm like, come on!
Yeah.
So I think that might have started with the momentum was building. I'm up 3.
Oh, we got a little rocky now.
Yeah. I'm up 3-2. I'm up 40 love.
Sure.
He's serving. Weak return, guide it back. Lose the point. Weak return, guide it back. Lose the point.
This doesn't sound like a rocky moment anymore, actually.
It's not.
Okay.
Blow the game. Should have had it.
But still feeling confident. Still feeling like Rocky.
Yes, 3-all.
Right.
Now I'm serving. Got to have this one.
You got to get this one.
Seventh game of the set, extremely important.
Yeah.
I'm down 30-40. Right at the net. The easiest sitter a four-year-old could have just tapped it. Swing too hard. Push it wide. Lose that match. Lose that game, rather. And now I'm in another tantrum.
Okay. Again, this is not very
Rocky. I lost the set 6-4.
Not very Rocky.
So there was a moment in time where after I missed that volley, dude, I took, and I don't do this. I'm telling you, I hate people.
Sure.
I think it's very immature when you look like a grown man.
You've got to take out your anger. You got to let it out.
Well, I took a ball and I tried to, slap it against the back wall. I hit it over the wall. I hit it on the court two way down. I had to walk out, which is embarrassing.
Sure. So you embarrassed yourself, yeah.
Oh, yeah, I did.
All right.
So and then I ended up losing, and that was...
Did they give you a participation award at least?
No.
They got to hand you one of those, trophy.
No.
Well, Mark, had I known that you were having such a rough day, I would have gone ahead and sent you some emojis, maybe to make you feel better.
Oh, that would have been nice.
There's a bunch of brand new emojis out. We can talk about that in a little bit. But to stay on the sports topic, if you want... I don't know how good you are at basketball. Are you better at basketball than you're at tennis or no?
Back in the day, I could hoop.
I can hoop.
Can you really?
I can still hoop, and I hooped in college.
What do you mean you hooped in college?
I played in college.
Like intramurals? What are we talking about here?
I played for the junior college that was affiliated with my college.
You played on the junior college basketball team?
I can hoop. And I actually have a question for you then in regard to that.
Wait, hold on a second. Pause the show. I want some dead air. Craig Collins out of nowhere.
So,
you're like one. I would consider you like skinny fat.
Yep.
You're
I am exactly that.
Yes. We did a spin class amongst the station, and you
True.
Were there. You basically looked like you had had a heart attack and it was over. And you didn't.
I don't know if that's accurate.
You did not look good. You didn't.
Right.
I didn't think you were gonna make it.
All right. That's
you
nice
didn't know if you were gonna make
well,
it.
Well, I haven't worked out in a while.
Right. But
I was in a better place in college.
But yet you played college hoop.
This is correct.
Which is amazing.
Yeah. No, I was your typical player, too, by the way. I'm the, short white guy who can't really jump that will shoot threes and free throws at the end of the game. I went in a lot when we were down a lot or when we were up a lot. And when we were down and I made a bunch of shots, they then took me out, which was the saddest point because you helped bring the team back. But you're a liability on defense, so you sit back down.
So you couldn't guard anyone, but you could shoot it.
I can shoot, yeah. So I have a question for you in regard to that, if you're a good basketball player as well. Do you think the three-point line is too easy, especially the NBA version of the three-point line? Do you think that at this point they've evolved to the players have evolved, and now it's too easy?
No, first of all, if the college three-point line is an easy shot, but it's, that's a shot that...
Hey, now.
No disrespect.
That was a bunch of disrespect right there. You're so angry about your tennis match, you're just throwing shade all over the place now.
I didn't mean to have it come out like that.
No, it's totally fine.
It's
easy. I could do it with my eyes closed. Yeah, sure.
19 feet 9 inches, not that difficult. That's just the reality.
23 feet 9 inches?
Much more difficult. I don't think they need to move. No, they don't need to move the three-point line back.
That's what they're saying. There's a debate right now about a way to make the three-point line more difficult. People like Steph Curry have made it seem like there needs to be a change here, and there's three different schools of thought. They think that they should just move the line back, which is the first kind of idea. The second one is to take a cue from baseball stadiums and make it weird. Make the three-point line in your specific stadium a certain way, make it certain things about it, like this part's closer, this part's further out, so it looks like the wall at a baseball park, and then you have your own three-point line. It's not the same at every single place.
Interesting.
And then the last idea is just
don't like
nothing.
That idea at all. yeah, I would do nothing.
Okay.
There's one guy in the league. Well, that's not true. There's a couple guys in the league.
I think a weird 3-point line sounds cool though. If you go to the Bulls' home court and you see a weird one, the United Center's got its own little things. Then you go somewhere else and your players would be trained to that, so they'd know where to stand on the court, and the other guys would kind of have to find the line. I think that's cool to me. Maybe you have a part of the 3-point line that's right up against the basket, and that's super easy, but it's a huge wall. Maybe you have to jump a wall in order to shoot a three.
I know. I appreciate the fact that you like a good gimmick.
What's wrong with a gimmick?
Well,
makes the game more fun.
I'm looking at the top 3-point shooters this year.
Well, Steph Curry is number 1, 2, and 3 probably. Draymond Green also on there?
Yeah. Well, Steph made 400 in 2 3-point.
He set a record after setting a record last year.
Right. But he shot 45% from three. That's not mastery, and he's the best in the game as far as pure volume. But there was, J.J. Redick of the L.A. Clippers, who played for Duke as well, shot nearly 48%, and Troy Daniels of the Charlotte Bobcats, he only shot 122 of them all year long, which is a little over one a game, but he shot 48% from there. Nobody's shooting over 50%. We can't call that mastery, can we?
No, I don't think you can call it mastery, but you have to acknowledge the fact that the game seems to be changing. Certainly,
oh, sure.
Certainly the 3-point line is a much bigger deal now than it seems that it's ever been. And a lot of people, you see a breakaway now and someone stops and shoots a three. I don't think you ever saw that. I actually got yelled at by my coach constantly. If we had a nice little breakaway, I was all by myself on the other side of the court, and I stopped and popped. Even if I hit it, I still was not allowed to do that.
Yeah.
You're supposed to lay that up.
Well, that's just sacrilegious on a lot of levels. If you can get a layup, take the layup.
No, it's wrong. I get an extra point. I get more points. And to me, that's a layup.
If you're that good at shooting...
Well, Steph is.
Yeah. You know, I'm trying. You know who's not good at shooting the 3-point shot?
Yeah, who's that?
That'd be Jimmy Butler of your Chicago Bulls. 136 in the NBA, 31%. I'm looking for Derrick Rose, too.
Well, and I guess that starts to change the conversation a little bit, too, because they're also talking Hack-a-Shaq, aren't they? That's something that's coming up a lot right now, too. The idea that it's getting just as prevalent, too.
They want to change around how the way you can foul people.
Is the game too easy? All these rules are about changing the game.
I mean, LeBron James, best player in the game.
That's not true. It's Steph Curry.
Okay, well, fine. LeBron number two. He shot 31% from three. Kobe Bryant, who was terrible this year, nearly dead, was at 29. But Russell Westbrook is a top 5 player in the NBA. 29% from three.
I like that I got you to talk about basketball. The first time we did this, you refused to talk about sports. And since you just brought up Kobe, I'm going to go there. The last game was not as magic as everybody says it was, because that was a terrible shooting performance. That was an atrocious shooting performance. I know he scored a lot of points. I know he went out on some sort of weird high, but that was the worst game of his career in some regard. It was terrible, and everybody celebrated it. Everybody said, yeah, Kobe, and it was a close game, and there were a lot, but they would have won probably on their own by putting Kobe on the bench.
I love that he went out to shoot.
I went there. I'm going to go there as Kobe went there.
I can't believe you just called out Kobe Bryant.
I did. He shot way too much.
His last game as a pro, he played 42 minutes. He was 22 of 50 from the field.
22 of 50.
He scored 60 points in his last game.
I know. I understand that part. But 22 of 50 is not a good shooting performance.
But but the guy was like dead all year, and he ended up
scoring. He was kind of dead in that game.
He had 60 points in his last NBA
50
game.
Shots.
I don't care. That was great.
How many points could you score in the NBA in 50 shots? You take 50 shots, Mark Carmen. How many points do you get? I couldn't get them off.
The only way I would get them off.
You stand in the corner. And we just throw it to you when we can. I like how I'm now in the NBA, for this.
For me to shoot 50 times, I'd have to be in the backcourt, and they'd be like, okay, go ahead. go ahead. You can launch that 50-footer as many times as you want. Dude.
Oh, man. So. I don't know. That is a lot of shots. That is a lot of shooting. He was the greatest at one time, though. So if we try to connect this to Muhammad Ali, and a lot of basketball players are not shy about being the greatest of all time. A lot of Michael Jordan, I see clips now on Facebook where people say that Michael, different than LeBron, different than everybody else, was much more respectful when he got that question while he was playing. Is that true? Because Michael, from his Hall of Fame speech, did not seem like a guy that was not proud of the fact that he's the best there ever was.
I don't necessarily recall Michael championing himself as the greatest to play.
His Hall of Fame speech, he brought the guy from high school that he got the...
Leroy Smith.
Yeah.
his Hall of Fame speech was maybe the most ridiculous thing that's
ever
happened.
He invited the guy that got his spot on what he thought was a varsity team in high school.
Right.
That is funny.
Leroy Smith is here, my guy.
Yeah.
Who I played on the JV. Leroy made the varsity.
Yep.
Yep, that happened. And then he, you know, called out Jerry Krause and everybody
else. He called out everyone.
I mean, it was unbelievable. But Mike's as great of a life as he's had, being the best basketball player to ever play, I mean, he just had a little bit of bitterness going on in there.
Well, right, and he wasn't, at that point at least, he wasn't shy about it. I don't remember when he was playing. I was a huge Michael Jordan fan, but I was also a kid. If he ever acknowledged that, did he ever do an interview where he said he was the greatest?
No, I don't think so. Not that I can recall.
So how do you feel about that now when people like LeBron do it? What does that make you think?
He doesn't...
he said, I am the greatest. He said, I am the best player in the NBA. He said, I am one of the, you know... He's
definitely
done it.
He's the best player in the NBA. That's true. Well, yeah. There's okay. I like to be entertained, right? So
yeah.
If you want to bring some cockiness to the table,
oh yeah,
let's go. And people don't like Steph Curry now because he's too good and he's biting on his mouth guard and he's pointing to the sky and he's doing all sorts of other stuff. It's like, dude, it's entertaining.
He doesn't ever say that though. Steph actually, in all his interviews, doesn't do that same thing.
Right, but people think he's fake humble. The old fake humble.
Fake humble is exactly what every athlete is. If you get to be a professional athlete, you are all fake humble. They all date supermodels. They all have a lot of money, and they get to play a sport for a living. If they are ever humble, it is not real.
260 texting, by the way, Craig Collins, you should get the Christopher Walken opinion on basketball.
I don't think it's a good idea.
Is that not a good idea?
I can do a Chris Walken kind. I don't do Christopher Walken, Trucker Phil. I do Christopher Walken, second cousin, Craig Walken, that sounds somewhat like Christopher Walken.
You've got it.
That is the impression I do.
Can we hear that coming back here?
Yeah, we can hear it coming back.
And we'll hit your emoji thing, too.
Okay, good. This is Carms and Collins on 720 WGN. Wait a minute, here we go. That's on me. That's not on our wonderful producer. That is Craig.
Shantae's doing a phenomenal job.
She is.
I have more notes for this
720
show.
720 WGN, Carms and Collins, night two of maybe no more nights ever, but we have two.
Stephanie, if you're listening, Shantae has
given me
She's given me a book.
And by the way, we have to take a photo of this at some point. Our producer tonight, Shantae, also labeled the sections. So there's actually a printed off piece of paper that says this is the Right Out of Science fiction section. This is the sports section. This is above and beyond. You deserve a medal of some kind, Shantae.
She absolutely right. does.
And not just the participation
but
kind.
But she doesn't, it's kind of like a walking tour. Like she doesn't want the credit.
No, it's very subtle. Yeah. She plays that producer role exactly correct.
I mean.
She's very humble too.
I think.
So you want me to do my Chris Walken before we do something else? Or
sure. Summer Baseball, by the way, is on WGN-TV. Watch a Central Division collision.
I did the one below it. Yep, so we're good there.
Oh, good.
Mm-hmm.
I was here. I just wasn't here.
Crazy.
Apparently.
Come on. Mark, you got to go. You got to listen to the show that we're doing. If I do one, you don't need to do one. And I'll do the rest of the reads tonight. No problem. I can do anything. You guys need me for the whole show. I'm here. Craig Walken.
It's not bad.
I know. It's not great, though. That's why it's not actually Chris Walken. It's his second cousin, Craig, who I'm good friends with. I love you guys. All right. I don't know how long I can do that for.
I thought that was, for a while. You can keep going.
No, you did the stretch. You actually did the little, stretch. I don't know if you wanted me to stretch or if you wanted me to stop, but.
I thought that I was just going to sit here until 5 o'clock and let that keep going.
I couldn't handle it when we have Orion on. Craig Walken can't talk to Orion.
Roger, what'd you think of that?
He's heard it before.
It's a work in progress.
Thank you. Give me yours. Yeah, you're going to critique. You got to have your own.
What? I don't
give me
do
a Chris
Walken.
Walken impression.
I don't do Chris Walken.
Well, then you can't tell me mine's bad.
But I know Chris Walken.
It sounds exactly the same.
No.
We sound the same. More cowbell. I got a fever. The only prescription is more cowbell.
Who do you do, Roger?
Yeah, Roger. What impressions do you do, Roger? Let's change the question.
It's 3:30 in the morning. I don't do impressions.
Oh,
really?
I do some, but I have to be in the mood, and it's just
you're not in the mood tonight.
It's just not working for me right now.
Okay,
all right,
okay.
Sorry. We'll get you in the mood at some point.
Can we get you some Dominic's Pizza up there?
Boy,
everybody's trashing Dominic's Pizza, Roger. Did you expect that? And they waited.
No, actually, I didn't.
Yeah,
I didn't. But you know, uneducated, often go off on tangents.
It's totally fine. Yeah. We all have our own opinions. When I was hungry, I think that
Carm,
pizza was fine.
I think I remember Carm down in the newsroom passing through saying, oh, man, these long nights doing sports, I need pizza. Thank you, Roger, for bringing pizza. I remember Carm. That was a long time ago.
That never happened. I did come in, and I'd ask you for a hug. I'd be like, Roger.
I'd give you a hug.
Tell me that I have a chance in this business. Will you give me a hug? Can we?
I'd give you a hug, but I don't know about that chance in the business.
Yeah, you got to work on your Mark Walken impression.
I know.
Yeah. And you're going to nail it.
It's very...
You want to talk about emojis?
Sure, let's go.
Is that something you want to talk about? There's a bunch of emojis coming out. Apple does these little things where they tell us, you know, what's next at their fancy schmancy events that they put on. And apparently there's going to be a huge update to emojis for anyone like Roger that feels like you cannot express yourself now with the current set.
Yeah. There's, you know, 5,000 graphic descriptions of people's moods, places, things. They just don't cut it for me. I need more.
You need a lot more. Well, there's going to be a bunch more, and I this is radio. I understand that, so you can't see what we're talking about. So I'll just give you the names of some of these emojis.
Okay.
Rolling on the floor laughing is an emoji now, and I feel like that already kind of was.
Wasn't it? I thought we already had laughing emojis.
Face with cowboy hat. If anyone felt like they were missing out on a face with cowboy hat opportunity, that is now an emoji.
I just want to stop you for a second and just let you know that I finally figured out what ROFL is by you talking there. I did not.
Rolling on the floor laughing?
I did not know that.
Wow.
I did not know
what did
that.
You think, what did you think Rolf meant? Did you?
I didn't
thought
know.
It was a dog on the Muppets.
Yeah, exactly correct.
I didn't know. I didn't care. I knew it was good.
He doesn't care.
But now you knew it was a good thing.
Yes.
And now you know exactly what it means.
Yeah, but now I know.
Right. And well, now someone can tell you in emoji form that they think you're so funny they're rolling on the floor laughing. They can also give you a clown face, a lying face, a drooling face, a nauseated face, or a sneezing face. Because I don't know when I've ever wanted to text someone that I'm about to sneeze.
Right.
But now I can do that.
That's the problem. If you're sneezing, you're not going to be able to get the sneezing face because your hand's going to slip. So now you give them like a clown face.
That's true. Which means
they think you're trying to be funny, like a clown.
All
you know?
Sneezing face emojis are actually dishonest. No one is actually sneezing while emojiing that you're sneezing. That is a lie. There is also a selfie emoji, which is just your hand and a phone. So you can now send someone an emoji saying to take a selfie.
I think I know somebody who might want to use that emoji that you work with.
Patty Vasquez?
Wow.
I mean, that should be that was actually designed for Patty. By the way, Roger, Truckard and Phil still texting in says that you do a great Frosty the Snowman on Lakeshore Drive.
Yes, I did.
So we're on the cutting edge here, Carms and Collins. That's what we are all about.
Oh,
what's cool in the world? Good morning, 3:36 a.m. That's the NBA on NBC music, which gets me emotional. We're going to talk to Muhammad Ali, by the way, in the 4 o'clock hour. Get back
which
to
which gets us both emotional.
It really does. So, but now we actually have a live guest for you, Peter Warman, who's the CEO of Newzoo. We're talking e-sports, which you might not...
This is a thing. Go ahead.
I want to get into what's a thing and what's not a thing and how there is...
No, these are athletes. The people who play this sport, and I'm using the word correctly, are athletes. And I know that Peter Warman is going to agree with me. Peter, how are you doing?
Good morning to you guys. I'm doing very well, thank you. I'm live from Amsterdam.
Nice. That's how is Amsterdam? What time is it in Amsterdam right now?
It's actually also morning, but it's 10:40.
Okay. All right. What do you do for breakfast? I'm just curious.
I actually do a typical English breakfast every Saturday morning with my kids.
Oh, that sounds lovely.
Hold on a second here.
He's got a typical English breakfast. He's sitting around. This sounds real nice.
Yes. And Peter, before we get into esports, give me three reasons why this summer somebody should book a trip to Amsterdam and live the dream.
Oh, God. You should be able to give more than three.
Amsterdam is the global capital of outdoor festivals. That's one.
Yep.
If you haven't seen Rembrandt's work, you should come this way. And the third one is you can visit my house and get a free beer.
Oh, my God.
I like the third one.
You're amazing, Peter.
And you just invited all of our WGN Radio listeners. We're heard in 38 states and parts of Canada, so thank you so much, Peter. That's very nice.
There's also this thing called the World Wide Web, Peter, so there could be a person in Amsterdam listening right now who might just be knocking on your door. I'm
going to lock my doors now.
Okay.
Anything's possible. So, all right, before we get into your role as far as the esports is concerned, Can you just give, for some of our listeners who are first hearing about esports at this very moment, at 3:38 in the morning in Chicago, Illinois, how and what exactly is the
esports? Mark wants you to explain that,
like,
it's a thing.
I love video games. I grew up on Pac-Man. I loved a Galaga, Centipede, yep. Space Invaders, but I didn't realize that now you're having like students winning $180,000 playing in the esport League of Legends playing video games. That
people are making millions of dollars doing this professionally, right, Peter?
How is this possible, Peter?
Yeah, indeed, it has seen explosive growth over the past years, and particularly in the States or North America. Yeah.
So, okay, how do I make money playing video games?
Yeah, what is it?
Cool. Well, it used to, video games are super popular. Competitive games are popular. It used to be in the past. People would try to beat each other's high score on Pac-Man. But now, now you've got all these multiplayer games. So you play teams against teams, five against five, online across the globe. And that is a new phenomenon that is very suitable to take it to the sports, take it to the next level. So have the best teams in the world compete against each other. And these games have such a big following that they can easily fill stadiums whenever there's a big championship. And that draws in sponsors, millions of viewers, and in the end, it gets the money rolling. Making
also,
it,
I think what you just bigger. Said is one of the most surprising aspects of this, is not only are people making a lot of money doing this, not only is this a sport that the players take it very seriously, but there is definitely an audience for this. There are definitely fans, and like you said, you sell out big sports arenas when these teams meet up to play in these championship kind of games.
Yeah, indeed, and the, you know, the... because everything is streamed live on the web and nowadays also available on TV and certain cable channels in the U.S., it's like tens of millions of people online in addition that watch it. And that's very comparable to big NBA games and stuff. So the comparison with sports is getting more relevant each day.
Now, as the CEO of Newzoo, do you actually get to train with some of these athletes? I am curious. I don't mean to laugh. I am curious what the training is like for the video game athlete. I know that it probably involves a lot of video game playing, which my wife always tells me I'm not allowed to do. But
yeah,
if I can win her millions of dollars, I got to eventually be allowed to do that. Do you see how they train, how they learn to be this good at this?
Yeah, I actually do. So the pro teams who indeed, have annual revenues anywhere between a couple million and maybe 20 million, those teams live together in a house. So you should imagine this is a global sport. So on a team, you could have a South Korean, an American, a Frenchman, and a Dutchman, and they would all be relocated into one what they call a gaming house, because they have to. It's not only skills that they have to do in the team; it's also a strategy. So they have to really they have different roles, and they have to really know each other, work with each other, 8 hours a day. To be good enough to be able to compete.
So that's the part there that needs to resonate to.
Eight hours a day.
8 hours a day.
At least.
Well, and Peter, I'm also curious, are they specialists in one game, or are some of these guys that are really good at this, they play, because video games are really different. Madden is not the same as Mass Effect. There's a wide range here. So are they good at one or a lot?
There's a wide range, and that's good because it attracts different audiences as viewers. But no, people really have to focus on one single game, because, for instance, for an outsider, a game like League of Legends looks identical as Dota 2. But there's no Dota 2 player that has ever been a champion in the other game. It is very specific. So what the bigger teams have, they have a team brand like Cloud9 or Fnatic. Those are names of teams. They have individual teams for each different game. It's so specialized you cannot be best at two different games.
You mentioned the League of Legends. Their championship series in 2014, I'm reading here, this is not off the top of my head, as you might imagine, that the final viewing for that garnered 27 million people, which, by the way, was better than Game 7 of the World Series, 23.5 million, and better than the deciding game of the finals in 2014 at 18 million. For someone who hasn't watched this ever, what exactly are they watching?
They're watching them play the game.
They're watching the people play the game, or they're watching...
You go to an NBA event. I'm sorry, Peter, I'm answering the question for you. And you watch people play basketball. They go to the event, and they watch people using a remote play. Am I right, Peter? They just watch people play the game.
They watch people play the game, but they... So for the bigger championships, you get a live feed of their game, so you can see the game that they're playing.
Right.
But also you have commentators, you have advertising.
Are there ring girls?
And not yet, but I think that's the next step.
That has to. I feel like this crowd would really enjoy a ring girl or two. I think that that's the right move for the video game world.
What kind of commentators are you looking for here, Peter? I'm always trying to advance the career.
Well, people with a beautiful voice, so I think that's you.
Yeah, that's all you need. You don't need to know anything about video games.
I mean, I'll be super excited. I'll get up to speed in 5 seconds here, and let's just go. And I love Amsterdam. Can I move to Amsterdam to do this? Can I be in Chicago? What do I got to do?
We'll make it work. We'll talk about this offline.
Okay.
That's not an on-air question.
I don't think this is real.
Mark, you don't need to go that way. When did this start to really blow up? How many years has this been this popular of a thing, Peter, that people can do this and aspire? I could be at home right now. Say I'm a 13-year-old kid, and my mom just yelled at me and said, stop playing that Madden. And I can look her in the face and say, I want to do this professionally. This is my calling in life, and that's now a real thing. How long has that been around?
Esports or professional gaming has been around since gaming has been around, but the explosive growth has only started about 2 or 3 years ago. And there's a couple of reasons for that. It's because one of them, a very important one, is that players can now stream their games live. So they are playing a competitive game, and they can push a button and stream the game on YouTube or on Twitch. So the broadcasting of consumers themselves and other consumers watching them has made the viewing experience way more important in the total gaming experience, and that has sort of pushed up the best players and made them famous, and then it sort of evolved from there. More money got flowing, and in the end, they were playing in Madison Square Garden.
Who's your biggest advertisers, Peter? Like, what type of corporations have jumped on?
Well, it varies a lot. So it's the sports venues. Like, we have... we have paying subscribers to our esports data and advice like Madison Square Garden. We have media companies like Turner. We have digital media companies like Facebook, Amazon, YouTube as a client. But most interestingly, it's the traditional sponsors. So Coca-Cola, Red Bull. Red Bull actually has a training center for esports athletes in Santa Monica. It's Buffalo Wild Wings.
Nice. You know,
we got a call.
That makes sense.
For Buffalo Wild Wings, sort of putting that in their, you know, in the restaurant.
Is Mountain Dew a sponsor?
Mountain Dew is tipping its toes in,
okay,
in
good.
Esports.
Good. That also makes sense.
Indeed. And then it's the financial guys. So it's like companies like Visa, MasterCard, and now it's the big ones that are coming in are guys like Verizon, T-Mobile, that type of companies are the next tier. So more and more the traditional sponsors that we also see in the NBA and NFL, and that's exciting.
Peter, what is your game, real quick? I'm just curious. I might not know it, but what do you play, and what is it?
I do play. My favorite game at the moment is called Rocket League.
Okay, that sounds cool.
You might never have heard of it, but it's like soccer, but then you're not a human, but you're a car, and the ball's about 10 times bigger, and when you score, the whole thing explodes. It's like soccer on steroids.
Sounded amazing. The whole thing explodes.
And it's a competitive game. It's a professional league as well.
By the way, Peter, I understand that you guys have offices in San Francisco and Shanghai as well. I've been to Shanghai, so I have that on my resume, and I love San Francisco.
You're really going after this, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. So,
okay.
So Peter, I know there's a way I can contribute to your organization from a broadcast.
Peter,
standpoint.
What kind of demo tape would you want from a Mark Carmen? Do you want him to just watch me play video games and try to anchor them?
Let's start with that approach.
Okay, cool, good, because I'm not that great at them, so we'll definitely go there, Mark.
How many people are in your corporation, Peter?
We're a research and analytics boutique, so we're only with 31 people, of which 24 here and 6 in San Francisco and a couple in Shanghai.
Tell me what you say to the little kid that wants to be a video game expert or video game athlete and how he, you know, tells his parents that.
Yeah.
It has to be encouragement. It's a real thing now. This is a real thing. And if I was, younger when this started, I would have loved this idea. Just go for your dreams.
Just, you, you need to ask your parents, okay, what's important for a future job? And they'll say communicative skills. You need to be a team player. You need to be responsible. You need to work hard. You need to specialize in a certain skill. And then the kid will say, that's exactly what's required to be the best League of Legends player.
All right.
I like that answer a lot. I actually also read that playing video games is harder than doing math. I read that for this. There's a story out there right now that says it's harder to play some video games than to just do, like, math in your brain.
I mean, I've watched the youth of America sit there and play.
Evolve?
Yes. What's the
You're going to sound like an old guy right now.
Yeah, I'm really going to sound
What's the one where they play with the buttons?
Yeah, the Xbox? The one with the buttons where you're... Call of Duty, I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah. Call of Duty's... And that's definitely one of the games that has a professional... Yeah.
I mean, they're playing all night, and then there's just no chance of going
with
to school.
With a lot of Mountain Dew, with Game Fuel.
Right.
Yeah.
One thing that is cool is that a big part of the audience doesn't play those games. So it's like me. I love Rocket League, but I don't have the time to spend as much to really learn League of Legends or be really good at Call of Duty. But I am a viewer. It's just like sports. I used to play basketball, but now I'm a viewer. So potentially, the audience of certain games can be larger than the gamers of those games themselves. And that is what's getting the industry excited. That's what's getting advertisers excited.
Yeah,
and media companies alike.
Question, Peter, from our text, and this is actually, you know, about some sort of stuff that went on, I guess. This is some sort of drama from the 224. Ask him about the team that got banned because their sponsors were from the adult industry. Are you familiar with this story?
Yeah, sure. I am. I mean, this whole scene is in the middle of a phase of maturing, professionalizing, maybe even unionizing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So you
have to be cognizant of, yeah.
With the pace that this is moving, you run into these issues, and we're sorting it out as we grow, you know? There's no time to really sort it out, and then we'll stop growth for a moment. So indeed, there's one of the game publishers who is pretty strict about setting rules for everything around their game, including esports. They said, we're going to ban betting sponsors and adult industry sponsors.
Well, betting sponsors, that seems...
Other rules are set, so that's where I expect, you know, sort of consolidation of rules across the globe.
Do they want to ban betting sponsors because they're worried there's going to be fraud in the gaming industry? Is that what's going on here? Because that's
you're going to start taking a not hitting the A button.
Well, I guess. I mean, well, otherwise, I don't see why that would be an issue. I mean, I would think money is money, especially when
I want to bet on a video game. I want to do that.
Well, there's big betting sponsors in the traditional sports,
right?
So I don't think we should be too afraid. It's just that there's one publisher that is stricter or more. Yeah,
and right. You have to work with all these publishers.
Yeah. So he needs to calm down. Bottom line, we don't need this. You know, let's not get all high and mighty in the esports world.
Mark, why did you pull some $1 bills out? Are you trying to bet right now? I've got no way to take that payment.
Honestly, you know, Peter started mentioning Coca-Cola, and I'm like, I could use a soda at the break here. I kid you not. So I went to the wallet to see if I had any singles.
You know, fair enough.
So Coca-Cola's getting a little love here.
Mm-hmm.
Peter, I hope you've turned into a super super wealthy man here because of this.
And if not, your life actually sounds pretty great as is, that you're having a nice breakfast in Amsterdam. That sounds pretty lovely.
Thanks very much. Yeah, I'm a happy person.
That's amazing. Well, Peter, Craig and I are going to be on the first flight over.
Yep.
And
we're giving you demo tapes. I want to be an athlete. I don't want to be an anchor person. I want to be in.
I just want to drink a beer with you, Peter.
And then okay. I like both approaches, and I'll try to facilitate.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Great to meet you, Peter. Good luck with everything at... for the CEO of NewZoo, Peter Warman, you have a good night, man.
So I got a question for you, Craig Collins.
Carms and Collins, 720 WGN. Go ahead.
Last week, you did the train versus car.
Yes.
And you were jacked about how a car is just way better way of a much better mode of transportation.
I was jacked all last show. But yes, I am particularly thrilled with the idea that it is more romantic to take a long drive than any other form of travel.
Are you jacked about tonight's show?
I am so jacked about tonight's
show.
Okay,
good.
Yeah.
All right, I had my Craig Collins epiphany topic question.
Okay.
Do you ever take airplanes?
Yes.
Okay.
My first airplane, I was 20, by the way, but I do.
That's late, but amazing. So you're on an airplane. What's the last flight you ever took?
I flew to Mexico last year.
Okay. What airline?
Volaris.
What?
Volaris.
Excuse me?
Yep. The name of the airline is Volaris. They are a special airline that flies. I actually flew back American Airlines, though. I guess I should have gone with that.
All right. Let's just stick with American. Okay. Just so we can all relate.
to make it easier for you.
And you were in coach, correct? You were not flying first class?
I certainly did not fly first class.
Okay. Here's the question. When you're on that flight to Mexico, which is roughly about 4.5 hours, I think.
Maybe, you are correct, yeah.
Yeah. Are you allowed to recline in your coach seat?
I am capable of reclining, so I'm curious as to who I have to ask. You said allowed.
You're most definitely allowed.
Okay.
By the letter of the law on an airplane, you are allowed to hit the button on your armrest and recline. But are you, as a conscious person who's trying to be a contributor to society, are you allowed to hit the the button, recline, and then all of a sudden, the person who had 10 inches of room and could barely breathe now can't breathe at all? Is that legal when you're on a flight to recline?
First, I'm intrigued that this is a Craig Collins question, and then I think I'm actually going to do exactly what you want, Mark. For sure, you're allowed to recline. 100%. The button is there. The person in front of me just did it. I'm absolutely allowed to lay back. I'm probably tired. This is a 4-hour trip. I woke up really early in the morning for this. So I'm going to recline as far back as I can, and the person behind me is going to have to deal with that.
Okay, 312-981-7200. We'll take texts on this, and if you want to call, you can. That's fine too.
There is no debate. 312-981-7200.
There's
like you
absolutely
said.
A debate.
So Mark, go ahead. You tell me. Are you allowed
You are most definitely not allowed.
You are being crazy. The button is there. I'm not comfortable as is. Why not get a little more comfortable?
You can do an inch back tops. But if you're the dude that hits and goes all the way back,
there's not so much back. Maybe it's another inch.
You can do like a good whole seat back, and you are just in the face. Badish, do you recline on an airplane?
As much as I can.
See,
absolutely
right.
Correct.
Badish is the type of guy that's going to recline on the airplane.
And so is Craig Collins.
I like to be comfortable.
Yeah.
And if they make chairs that are meant to recline, then recline I shall.
Recline the hell out of that chair.
See, it is rude. It is inappropriate.
In no way, shape, or form is it rude.
There is not enough room.
No way.
You are impacting somebody else's enjoyment of their flight.
And they can recline
then
too.
Then let them recline. Yeah. Exactly. Everyone in that entire aisle, all
there
the
we
way
go.
Back.
We've given
from
PSAs.
From 1 to 50,
we've given
recline.
PSAs out tonight, and this is another PSA. This is to all of Chicago and all of the world. Recline. Recline on your airplanes. Go ahead and do it. Freedom to the people. Recline, recline, recline. I'm going to stand up on a soapbox.
Here's the slogan. Recline is fine.
Do not recline. You are you will not be.
You got to brainstorm this better.
I do. You will be an ass and not divine.
No.
Okay.
No.
I don't think that's going to go on a T-shirt anytime soon.
I don't feel comfortable like calling either of you two an ass.
No. Go ahead. Call me an ass, and I'll take it. But we're not reclined that far. I can't actually see the other person's face. If this was a chair that went all the way back, I agree with you. But these airplane chairs, they go back like an inch and a half.
815 asking a great question. What does this have to do with romance, which is also a great accomplishment when you're flying?
Yeah. No, that's an impossible accomplishment most times. Unless you go in prepared. How many times have you met a lady that you didn't know at all on the airplane?
I've seen more than at least a handful now. And I've flown a fair amount of my life.
Oh, my God.
Where something, you know, you get the two single middle-aged adults, and all of a sudden they're just going at it in the back of the plane. This happens.
That makes no sense. We're a minute late for the news. You definitely recline.
You please.
Yeah.
Public service announcement from @TheCarm on Twitter. Please follow me too. @TheCarm. Do not recline on your airplanes. You are ruining someone else's life, and you can fall asleep upright just fine.
720 WGN.
Carms and Collins, 720 WGN.
Yeah.
Carms is now dancing.
I like this tune. 408. Good morning.
Good evening. I refuse to acknowledge it's morning even now.
Oh, we do have three girls sitting across the way on Michigan Avenue.
I can't see them.
Taking selfies.
Okay.
are definitely not.
You should send them the selfie emoji.
It's most definitely not their morning. It's most
definitely their evening. And Patty and I also agree that until we go to sleep, it's. So I refuse. You can say good morning
it's
to people.
The
I say
morning.
Good night. No, it's nighttime
morning.
Still. It's still night. It's still dark out.
I agree with you on the airplane seats, but
okay.
I'm disagreeing with you. On
no, it's
the,
nighttime. Roger, yes. You're crazy. We have a call from Donald. Donald wants to weigh in on the airplane conversation.
312-981-7200. Are you a terrible person if you recline in, on an airplane?
That's a weird way to ask that question, but Donald, you have thoughts?
Yes. My thoughts is, first of all, you're fine if you recline because
yep.
when I look at it as a passenger, you mm-hmm. pay for the seat.
You
anything
did.
In between is free airspace.
That is correct.
What about the passenger behind you that also paid for his seat, Donald, and wants to enjoy his flight, and now all of a sudden you're in his lap?
Well, they're just as equal as you are. You're paying for the seat. The
mm-hmm.
free airspace in between
they
is
gave
everybody.
You a button. You push that button, you recline, my friend.
Donald, but that dude is just as equal as you, so he's like, listen, my man, I'm equal as you. You stay in your space, I'll stay in mine.
He's got his button.
Freedom of choice.
Freedom of choice. I like that. That's a good answer for this, Donald. Thank you for the call.
Donald, I love you.
Have a good day.
I'm saying I love you too much on the air lately.
Yeah, well, it's fine. You love a lot of people.
I
for
do.
Me, 312, yes, it's rude for us average-sized guys at 6'3". That is not an average-sized guy.
You're not average-sized. I'm very jealous of you.
Right. I am also jealous of you. And maybe I'd have starker feelings about this the same way Carm does if I were a bigger dude. But I've never felt my, you know, my personal space invaded that much when somebody in front of me reclines. It's never made
I,
the...
I despise it. I really... You know... Have you ever been on? Have you ever rode? Have you ever rode the Hound?
Do you fall asleep on airplanes?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
But
I've not greyhounded since I was, you know, in school.
Part of the reason that I'm standing up right now is that I could just fall asleep at any moment. I don't mean that in a way that I'm not.
But you have to recline when you fall asleep. You can't fall asleep in that chair without it reclined. You got to recline.
No, you don't.
Yes, you do. It's uncomfortable to fall asleep on an airplane. You're tucked like a little sausage in this corner. If you have the window seat, your head is all. Wrinkled into the window.
That little ounce of reclining.
Oh, it makes the world of difference.
As much as it bothers the person.
I pull a blanket up and I have that little 1 inch of reclining and I feel like I'm in bed.
You are adorable.
Thank you.
Have you ever ridden the Hound?
Yes. I have greyhounded in my life.
Okay. When's the last time you hounded?
Not since I was a kid. Not since I was in school.
I mean, the Hound is a big move.
Yes, it is.
And so I hounded last year.
Where did you hound?
I hounded across Florida.
Oh, wow.
Yes, it was a. I'm telling you, it was.
So these were several.
This
small
was,
trips.
This was a legit thing, as they like to say nowadays. The old
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, you got
thing.
Legit.
What I was with the I had a family trip. They left, and I wanted to go visit a buddy down in Hollywood. I think that's how this all works. So I was on the Hound. It was like a 7-hour Hound.
Okay.
Okay.
It's a long bus trip.
It was a significant. It was a maybe.
Is there a bathroom on the Hound?
There's a bathroom on the Hound.
Okay.
But the thing.
Do they stop for food?
They stop all the time.
Where do they go?
I had some fried chicken at a gas station. It was delicious.
At a gas station?
Yes.
That sounds terrible.
It does, doesn't it?
Every part of that's bad.
But I walked in there and they were like, it was like fresh made fried chicken.
Would everybody agree to go to like a kind of sit down fast food restaurant like a Fazoli's? Like let's do that. Let's do a little. Just something, you know?
I love that Fazoli's just made it onto the show. I've never thought of Fazoli's as a thing. And it just...
I would love if I was in a Greyhound. I feel like that's the perfect blend of actual restaurant and fast food that I go to
like
a Fazoli's.
Chi-Chi's.
Yeah, Chi-Chi's.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's perfect.
Yeah. When you walk into a gas station, though, there's an actual fryer and it's legit.
Oh, it's terrible still. It's not good.
Oh, it was amazing.
No one's cleaned that in a year.
Ever.
Ever.
It was installed and done, and that
you actually ate a product that you don't know when they put it in.
No, yeah,
you don't know when they started cooking it.
I most definitely took a year off my life eating, or
yep.
at least
sure
called
did.
6 months. But the point being here, Craig, is on the Hound. What's worse than somebody reclining is you can. It's just random who's getting on and who's getting off and who's smoking for, you know.
You can smoke on the bus?
Well, they stop all the time, and so people will come out, they'll chain smoke, and they'll get back on the Hound, and then they reek next to you. So
Other people call it the Hound, or is this something you're trying to make
probably,
happen?
Probably might. I feel like people call it the Hound.
Okay.
But so my point is that I had the strategy of I put my magazine on the seat next to me. I put headphones
there. I don't like that.
Yeah.
I really dislike that even on the CTA. You put stuff on the seat next to you.
CTA.
Who do you think you are? Well, that's my first question.
I think I'm Mark Carmen. I'm on the Hound, and there are other seats on this bus. Do not sit next to me unless there are no other seats, and I'm going to strategize you. So I did this, and there was one guy that I absolutely positively did not want to sit next to me, and I had it. He walked past me. He was in the back of the bus. There was definitely other options. The bus pulls away from the terminal, and he realizes that no one's sitting there. He was just completely watching my game, and he just walks up. Yes, can I sit there? I'm like, oh, my God, is this really happening?
Yes, it is. Yes. And it's another seat next to you, so suck it up.
I did. He sat down, and he reeked, and it was tough, Craig.
No, I don't feel for you at all. I feel like you're a terrible person to commute with. I went there. I set it out. I hate when people do that on the CTA.
Well, that's fine.
Do you take the CTA all that often or no? Do you man spread on the CTA?
No.
All right.
No, I don't. The CTA is a whole.
It's a different animal.
Yeah. Well, first of all, like now that the CTA has changed from the 2x2 to the long 10 seat.
Yeah. That's not great.
Yeah, I'm not looking to go butt to butt on the CTA. I'd rather stand. I'm pro standing on the CTA. It's never.
Would you hit on a lady on the CTA? You were talking last time we did a show last week that you want to pick up ladies all over the place. Is the CTA a spot you think you need to start trying out?
In theory, I would love.
That's a big mistake. Okay, go ahead.
In theory, I would love to do it. And
you're trapped on this train with this other person or this bus. And if you start to hit on them and it's not going well, you guys are there. So you're just a creep. Then.
Yeah, but then it's like a 5 minute and you're done.
Have you ever seen somebody that you haven't seen in a long time on public transit?
That's happened.
I hate when that happens.
Why?
Because if I haven't been talking to you for the last 3 or 4 years, it's because we have nothing to talk about. And if we're trapped on a 25-minute train ride, I am stretching for stuff. I'm asking about your family that I haven't checked in years. I'm asking about anything. I talk about the weather for 10 minutes, give a full Tom Skilling report to this other person.
So you're uncomfortable with silence.
I am uncomfortable with silence. When you know, because you know somebody, you get on the bus, your eyes lock, and immediately right. It's like, oh, hey, we're about to catch up for 25 minutes, and I did not plan this at all, and I don't even want to tell you a lot of stuff about me.
So number one, you want to be planned. Number two,
if I run into a person, like a guy that I was in with high school, there was a guy that I bumped into a few weeks ago that we went to high school together.
Was he the cool guy?
No, he was not. He was sort of in my group of friends too. So like, I legitimately know this man, and still, the 25 minutes seemed like the longest bus ride I've had in a while.
But was there any moment of connection where?
Sure. There's that moment where you laugh about that thing that happened that one time. But then that's over. You can't reminisce for 25 minutes, and if we did, we would actually still be friends. So, I hope he's not listening, by the way.
No, I'm sure he's not.
Okay, good.
The odds of him listening
are pretty terrible.
630 is listening, though, and says, LOL about seating on Greyhound. I eat at Taco Bell a couple refried beans, try to be gassy as best as I can. Now, that seems just rude and wrong.
Yeah, that seems like another way that you shouldn't go.
In Dating 101, how to meet the cute guy / lady behind you, push that button
and recline.
Yeah,
I agree with that.
And then you've already, like...
Then you can make the joke, am I being a jerk? You look pretty, that kind of stuff.
I mean, that's folk. That's Creepville all day. Yeah, how are you? I'm going to recline.
I haven't been single for a while. I don't know. I don't have any game anymore.
Well,
that's fine.
I have been, and I have no game. Can I give you one karma observation from the last news break?
Please.
I went out, and I got. I was going to get a Coca-Cola, but I ended up with a Minute Maid 100%.
I see what you did there.
Yeah, 100% orange juice from Concentrate with vitamin C. $1.75. These are the hard-hitting topics that you get at 4:17 in the morning.
Did you feel weird getting a Coke at 4:17?
I just didn't think the soda was the right choice for my life at this moment in time. Didn't need that carbonation, that sugar, even though there's a lot of
what's
sugar.
Your carmavation? Is that what we're calling it?
On one level, I think paying $1.75 for an orange juice is on some level just wrong, and it's too much. And I just go ahead and buy the big carton and be prepared in your life. The other side of me is, how does this product, in a plastic bottle, get from its origin with the orange juice in it?
Are you really you're asking me a shipping question? That's
no,
what we're doing?
No, it's not a shipping question.
Okay.
It's more of a like,
how did
the whole thing get created and delivered to you, and it's only $1.75? There are some genius people out there. Do you know how much it would take me?
Did you smoke a lot of pot at some point, Mark? This is the kind of question. No, just curious. You want to know how this became a thing.
Yes.
How people put orange juice into a tiny bottle, put it into a vending machine, and then gave
and
it to us.
And we created trucks and plants.
I think it is supply and demand, my friend. I think people were standing in an office building sometime before vending machines. I don't know when that is. God forbid. And they said, you know, it would be nice right now, a big machine that had a whole... Do you know what's being vended these days? You can get a vended pizza. You can go to a vending machine and have a pizza created and dropped out in front of you.
No, you can get your wife at a vending machine nowadays.
That doesn't make...
Well...
Really? Okay. All right. All right. Let's do it that way.
Listen, I get it. We're more and more creative. You can go
to some
vending machine.
Right, so that's how that product exists. It exists because somebody was like, I would love an orange juice, and I would love full control of getting that orange
juice. But I feel like the fact that this thing is sitting here at 4 in the morning that I can just go and get it should cost at least $5. Like, the fact that I...
No. No one brought it to you. That's why there's a vending machine.
Of course,
you didn't call a guy and have him deliver an orange juice.
But at some point, somebody brought this to me, and there were multiple...
Yeah, he brought a bunch, though.
Right, but there... Yes.
To sell to a bunch of idiots like you at 4:17 in the morning at the radio station.
But it's just... It's incredible.
Were you thinking that as you were buying it?
How did we figure this out? How did it get done? How did this plastic bottle that cost maybe less than a tenth of a penny to make...
Correct.
How did they figure out...
They now bottle water, by the way, and that's a successful business.
Yes, I understand all this.
Convenience in America is a big, big problem. We like convenience a lot. We go there all the time.
The mass production of things is something that I just can't really wrap my head around. Is that too weird for you?
No, that's not too weird. I'll give you a different Craigservation, I guess, if we're doing that now. This is from the internet, though. It's completely off topic from what you were talking about. Why is orange juice a thing in a bottle? That's a great topic, though, Mark. Face recognition will soon end our anonymity forever. There is a product being created in Russia. I think it's already actually out in the App Store in Russia. It's called Find Face. These two guys put this thing together where you can hold the camera of your phone up to somebody's face. It will recognize what they look like, search the social media databases, and tell you who they are. So you can be walking down the street. You can see a lovely lady across the street from you, Mark. Hold your phone up and almost take a picture of them, but not really. The face swap, whatever it is, Find Face just realizes what they look like, and then you'll know who they are, maybe some stuff about them. You could pretend you went to college with them, I guess.
So you're telling me that
Find Face.
There's going to be randos just holding up their phone at you as you're walking down Michigan Avenue, and then they're all of a sudden going to be linked to your Facebook. And
that's Mark Carmen.
Oh, that's bizarre.
Right. And they'll know all about your orange juice habits, everything. They'll be able to... It's creepy. It is. It's like Big Brother at this point, right? This is the point where...
Everybody's watching.
Technology now, we figure out that we can know anything about each other. The social media out there already is sort of a worry. When you go on dates now, since you're a dater in the social media world...
On a date tonight, yes.
Okay. Do people ask you stuff and they know the answer, but they pretend they don't because they saw it on your Facebook?
Wow.
I'm curious about that because there were so many questions in the dating world that you can't really do anymore. You can't ask where somebody's from because you do know. If it's on their Facebook page and you guys met through Facebook or something, you know.
Well, it's a different question. So you're from Ohio. Did you grow
up? So you went to Notre Dame. That's so lovely.
Did you grow up a Buckeye fan?
That's not creepy. You don't like the non-discovery aspect of that? You ask a different...
That doesn't seem that foreign. I think that's fine that there's a little bit of research being done.
There's not just a little bit, though. They could go down your Facebook page, see a bunch of information, maybe get a sense of your humor.
Well, in the J-Swipe world that we have so eloquently talked about on this radio station.
Every time.
I mean, it's linked to your Facebook. So you so you see if you're willing to, you don't have to necessarily link it, but the online dating, if you do link it to your Facebook, then you see what friends you have in common. So then you can be calling up those friends, hey, so-and-so swiped me, what do you know? And then not only do you know what's on their Facebook page, but you know everything about their...
You can do background research.
Yeah, you know their divorce, and you know the fact that they were...
No, I don't like that.
Right, I mean, that's most definitely...
I think that's probably why people are more vain now, because they think they get to know a person from social media and all this other stuff, and you probably write somebody off because you think, oh, no, they did this or, oh, they did that. And you wouldn't have found that out for six dates before social media.
Right.
And
now just fast forward.
Right. Well, that fast forward is fast forwarding too much. And now we can just walk down the street and know who people are.
Which, at the end of the day, for real, it just limits our connection.
Like, exactly.
Like, we're not even going to talk. We're
no.
Okay, I know everything. You know everything.
Right. I'm gonna pass you on the street, be like, oh, that's Mark Carmen. I know everything about him. I don't have to meet that guy.
Yes or no? Are we getting naked or not? I just jumped to there. Which,
does that ever work? Does that line?
No, that doesn't work. Okay. I'll give you one other observation for tonight.
And what are we calling that? A Carmservation?
Oh.
Do we have a name for this? All right, no, go ahead. I don't want to test your brain too much.
No, I was getting distracted for a second there. So I as I was walking over here tonight, walking to my car, I witnessed a breakup on the sidewalk.
Ah, that's the worst.
Or at least a major fight. So they're looking at each other. He's got the fake smile.
Were they drunk or were they?
No, they were sober. And, okay. And he's like, is this where we're at? Is this where we're at? Is this where we're at? And he just turns and walks away. And then she's just kind of left there. And
did she cry?
And as at the car, I'm just like, I'm just walking by. I'm like, oh, okay, this is awkward. I almost wanted to wanted to talk to her. What happened? Why was he so mad? What's going on?
That's not the right time. But
no,
yeah.
It was most definitely not the right time. But so what I did was I stopped at a tree and acted like I was doing something on my phone just to sort of see how if they were going to come back, and I sort of spied the whole thing. And so,
oh my God,
I think so. She got on her phone and I think was calling him.
You stood by a tree,
yes,
close to where these people were fighting,
yes,
and just watched what was happening.
Yes, I was.
It was stalking strangers.
Seriously, we made fun of him for being a stalker mm-hmm. before, and he took offense to that. But Carm, that is stalking people.
Oh yeah, no, it was a minor stalk.
Right, it's fine. So what happened? What's the end? Did they get back together?
She got on her phone. I assumed that she was calling him, but he didn't pick up. Okay. And so maybe she wasn't calling him. And then she proceeded to kind of sort of just stay on the phone. And
she never went in with hashtag on the Carm.
She was walking after him, walking, and then finally she stopped. As he turned, he was very, very angry.
Yeah.
There was nothing I could do. There was nothing I could do. And as we get back to the beginning of the segment, your orange juice from the 6-year-old is delivered to a grocery store.
Look at this. Edutainment.
A grocery distribution center on a 53-foot long refrigerated trailer. I know that. I used to work in trucking at 35 degrees. FYI. Greetings from a Flying J truck stop in Emporia, Kansas. Yes! Nice to listen to my hometown radio station. We'll be home next week.
Don't get any food at the gas station you're at if you're there, 630. No, do not do that.
Why not? The Flying J is pretty cool.
Flying J is awesome.
All right, yeah. I don't know about the Flying J.
There's a whole chain of them.
I was just putting it in the...
You get yourself a good chocolate milk in Emporia.
Did you read the 815 as well? You got another text there, Carm.
Sheesh,
Carm.
No wonder you're not doing the romantic dance, no recline, no talkie during transit time.
Well, actually, I advise that the no talkie during transit time is probably a good approach.
I think you're making a leap there that you don't know about, sir or madam. How do you know that I'm not doing the... ...720 WGN... 428. Good morning.
I'm Carms.
You're Collins.
That's exciting.
It really is.
We have 32 more minutes to do
radio show.
That.
Don't do that.
So, are you a sucker in stores, Mark Carman?
Most definitely.
Do you know that there's a lot of subliminal things they're doing to make you buy stuff?
I am subliminally aware of that.
That sounds almost impossible. But I saw a story that said everything stores do to trick you into buying more things, stuff like Starbucks actually pumps that coffee smell as far outside of their little stores as they can. So that really strong smell that you get when you walk by a Starbucks, that is very purposeful.
Mm.
And they are pushing that smell out there. H&M plays loud music and tries to bring people in that, you know, the cool kids. Abercrombie and Fitch, if you've ever walked by them, you can smell their cologne from a mile away.
I get so turned on by an Abercrombie and Fitch. The models there are just so good.
The female models?
Yes,
okay.
Correct, the females.
Right,
but the men are hot, too.
Yeah, that's fine.
Let's be honest. I mean, Roger Badish, I saw him, you know, with his shirt off in an Abercrombie and Fitch. I walked for it.
He's bringing in the people there.
There's no
yeah,
doubt.
I was waiting for you, Carl.
I wanted to buy that bathing suit that Badish was rocking.
Have you ever noticed that McDonald's plays very fast music because they want you to eat and leave?
Interesting.
Apparently all the music at McDonald's next time you go, 312-981-7200, if anyone's at a 24-hour McDonald's at 4:30 in the morning, you're probably not sober, but tell us how fast the music's going.
I don't understand people that actually eat in the fast food restaurant.
Of course, why not?
That's a terrible choice.
You go out and eat alone, which we learned last week on Carms and Collins, but you refuse to do it at a fast food restaurant? So what, do you eat in the car?
Yes.
Because you can't, that's the thing, that's the trick with it. If you don't go drive-through, then you have to take it home with you, and you're only making the fast food worse by giving it time. By letting it sit out, that's only making it less attractive of a meal.
If you sit in the fast food restaurant,
you eat it right away at least.
Yeah, but the grease is just going to seep into your system, and you're going to fast forward your heart attack. You need to get away from that place and just take your medicine. And that's why you eat in the car, because
eating in the car is dangerous. You can't. What meals do you eat in the car? A good chicken nugget. That's a car food.
I'll have anything in the car.
Eat Arby's in the car.
Arby's, a roast sandwich. Beef sandwich. They can roast fall beef. All over the place.
Not the way I eat. I'm a veteran at this.
Falling all over the place is not an issue.
Of course, it's an issue. Do you clean the car regularly?
Not really, no.
Okay.
I mean, I've got.
You have some treats when you go home. You got some stored treats.
Yes, and if I in Badish's scenario there of going Arby's, if I find a leftover piece of meat the next day
or a curly fry,
that's a good sign.
That sounds disgusting.
It's
every part of that.
Well, that's
okay. Fine.
Who changed his name?
So we started the show tonight celebrating one of the greatest athletes, human beings, icons, who is no longer with us. 74 years old, Muhammad Ali passing away, battled Parkinson's for many, many years. He was in a Phoenix hospital. One of the greatest heavyweight champion, but more so a
personality. He was a worldwide personality.
He was the epitome of how an athlete can use his platform to impact the world.
Yeah.
Very, the greatest athlete. I don't want to get into comparisons. I just did that. But I just.
No, he's one of the greatest athletes of all time. We don't have to call him the greatest or not call him the greatest. He is one of them. There are others. But like you said, it was more than just that. It was more than just the fact that he could go into the ring and dominate people. He did a lot more at a time when it was very, very difficult to say or do anything like what he was saying or doing. Before we get too much more into Ali, do you want to take this call from Mike ridiculing you about your dating life?
Seems wrong, but we can
I apologize.
We'll detour back to
Mike. I apologize for this detour. It's only because Mike is calling to make fun of you that I let him on the air. Mike, what did you want to say?
Mark blew it.
How so, Mike?
Well, I would have gave her a consoling shoulder.
Yep, exactly. She needed one.
Ask her if she wanted to go for a cup of coffee.
Oh, you're talking about on the street.
Yeah.
Our lady that was walked away by a guy. You're going there. You're going there. You're going there. I'm going home. And she was.
She could have been the one.
She probably is the one. She's out there now.
That was fate. That was fate right in front of his face.
Delivered a girl to your face. Didn't do anything.
Yep. Just for that, you're going to be on a plane one day, and someone's going to recline
they're going to recline, not care.
Mike, you're not a recliner, are you?
I haven't even been on a plane.
Ever?
Never?
Nope. Well, a small plane, a Cessna,
Okay, wait,
plane.
Have you been on anything that reclines with people behind you, though? A bus of some kind? Have you been on anything where there's a reclining opportunity?
Nah, last time I was on a Greyhound bus was probably, maybe 45 years ago.
All right, then just speak about it in general terms. Do you think reclining is okay?
You've lived your whole life without flying, Mike. Is there a fear of flying? Is this an economic issue? What are we dealing with here?
Yeah, I don't like being in something that I don't have any control over. Yeah.
Fair enough.
Well, then that means that he can recline in a car. He drives a car.
Right now.
You're reclined? Good.
I'm planning in a car right now, sitting waiting to go into work.
There you go.
What do you do, Mike?
Electrician. I talked to you last week.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, same guy. Yeah.
Mike, you're the man.
You really
just,
are the
just,
man.
Just know this.
Well, by the way, I did rat you out to Nick, on...
Spy, oh, no, and so. We played it. I heard it. Mark Carmen being afraid of Nick DiGilio. He played it back.
What'd he
say? He then said he loves you. Did you hear it, Mike? Did you hear it?
Yeah, I listen every day.
Yeah.
Was that last night that he did that?
Yeah.
Because so, I listened to his show from like 2 until 4.
You just missed it.
I literally just missed it. Yep.
Probably happened at 4:30. He played it back. He said he loves you. Nick still didn't weigh in on me, but he said he does love you. So that was nice.
No, that's so incredibly nice to hear.
Yeah.
But I was listening last night, and then I had a full meltdown in the middle of the evening. And I was like,
Mike, we both agree with you. Carm blew it. This is true. Sorry, you're going to work at 4:40.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yes.
Just in case you ever see that again, just step right into it.
Yeah. You should.
Thanks, Mike.
Have a good night. Or a good day, I guess, Mike. He's starting his day. Lean into it, Carm. Start practicing your lines for when you see somebody get broken up with.
Lean in is a whole new thing, too.
Oh, really?
To me, it is.
Okay. You're not a leaner?
Have you heard this? Just lean in. Just.
What do you mean? For first kiss? Are we talking first kiss? Hitch started it.
To me, it's more like just like engage.
Okay.
Just lean into that topic. Just lean into that moment. Lean into the newscast badge.
I don't know. I've been saying it for a while. I steer into the wind. That's what
I go
do.
Full head first. I don't lean.
You
I
dive?
Right in there. Dive, fall, whatever.
Yeah, you dive in.
Yeah.
Badish dives in.
I dive right in. Yeah.
Carm doesn't know what to do.
Carm, he doesn't. I'm going to lean. No, I'm not going to lean.
He gets confused. He half leans and pulls
it back. But I'll tell you, Carm, next time you lean in to be there for that lost soul,
you really got to lean in.
Just look over your shoulder because you don't know if the guy's coming back. I'm just warning you. Just be careful.
That's a good point. In this case, I most definitely knew he was not.
Oh, look at this. From the 214, are we still asking you guys anything? Why not? We're not actually playing this game, but sure, ask us stuff. Carm, please explain to the listeners how you have siblings 15 and 20 years older than you. That you did just drop that casually at the beginning of the show.
I mean, if you're going to program the show 214, you might as well make it a segment. Ask Carms and Collins anything. 312-981-7200, text or call, and we'll answer you anything as we talk about Muhammad Ali, the greatest man ever. And by the way, I'm doing the beat today at 3 o'clock. I'm going to have a full tribute for Muhammad Ali.
Of course.
So there's that. How do I have siblings 15 and 20 years older than you? Well, okay.
You don't want to answer this question.
No, I'll answer it. I mean, it's not that exciting. My father and mother started their parenting with my oldest brother, who in 1953.
Yep.
I don't believe he was a planned entity.
I don't believe you're a planned entity either if you're 20 years later.
And then we're going to get there. And then, you know, my other brother came along 5 years later.
That sounds planned.
I actually had a sister in between the two, but that's a whole other story.
Also planned.
Also not planned. I don't think any of them were planned. I just actually learned this recently.
Casually planned. Maybe, like, not totally against it happening.
Right. And then, you know, my dad was 47. My mom was 43. They were on a little trip to Paris, and the spirit moved them. And, you know, about 2 months after that, my mother was saying something along the lines of, if I didn't know any better, I swear I think I'm pregnant.
Is that normal to know that much about how you were conceived? I don't know my conception story. I don't know where the parents were, what they were up to, and what moved them.
Well, I
you know a lot about that.
I mean, I don't know the exact movement of the night. I just know that I was conceived in a very romantic spot.
Sure.
And
thus you are a very romantic guy.
Yeah, that's what that's it. So that so it's they're this. We're all the same, come from the same tree here, team.
Right. And nobody was planned in your family. That's what we learned, which is very interesting.
So, but it was very cool to have two older brothers who would call you up when you were 8 years old and say, do you want to go to the Bulls game tonight and see Quentin Daly play? And then I would just be thrown on the Metro at eight, which you could do back then without any real repercussions of bad parenting in DCFS. And I would just, you know, I'd ride down into the city. They'd pick me up. I'd go to the game. I'd sleep over at their apartment. I was the cool guy, and then I'd be put back on the train and go back home. It wasn't a normal childhood, but that's what it was.
From the 815, this we're now transitioning back to the Ali conversation, but Sweetness was there to greet Ali along with Hank and the Babe and a few others.
That's amazing.
That is really cool. And actually, there is a viral photo right now on Facebook of Prince and Muhammad Ali together, saying that it's great that they're together again. So, you know, if we're going to talk more about Muhammad Ali, which we promised ourselves we would do, the conversation, 312-981-7200, has to come a little bit from you guys, because Mark and I have admitted that while we have a heavy appreciation for Muhammad Ali, we weren't exactly around when all of this was happening, when it was going on, when it really would be as impactful as it is to just learn about it later. So 312-981-7200. Ali
stories. I was around.
Yeah, Raj, go ahead.
Yeah.
Well, and we're really looking for people who at the time thought that Ali should not be able to box, and who thought that who was letting the country down.
That's what you're looking for, yeah.
Yes, I like the people that back in the day did not like him for his braggadocious attitude, for his unwillingness to fight in Vietnam. There's just a lot of people did not like Muhammad Ali. And then he went on to become maybe the most beloved sports figure of all
time. We got a text earlier tonight, to your point, from someone that said he was a draft dodger, as if that's some sort of huge, horrible, negative thing. So, you know, there certainly were two sides of that conversation before. Roger, what did you want to say about it?
Well, I think he was one of the greatest boxers of all time. I covered a lot of boxing when I worked out in Vegas, but this was back after he'd already left the ring, early 80s, late 70s, early 80s. Larry Holmes was up and coming at that point. He hadn't boxed for the heavyweight title yet. But back when Ali was younger, and going through the Olympics and then going into pro boxing.
Right.
The characters, the boxers at that time were so bigger than life.
You're talking about everybody.
Yeah, the stars of the boxing world at that time. And boxing just seemed like, I don't know, it just, to me, it seemed like a different style, a different feel than boxers 30 years later. Boxing today, I don't care to watch it.
It's not the sport anymore.
It's not that sport at all. But it just felt so different back in the day. First of all, it was something to be able to see a heavyweight fight on free TV. You can't do that now. Everything's pay-per-view.
It's true.
So it that has a different feel about it.
Well, beyond the boxing, though, because it intrigues me in such a different way, the person he was out of the ring. I know it's so ridiculous to say that Muhammad Ali, to me, is so much more than a boxer, that the boxing is actually secondary, even though he was one of the best, one of the greatest that ever did it. Do you remember a lot of you know, the things he said and the way that you felt, or the way that people around you felt when he would give an interview about being a draft dodger, about, you know, any of the stuff that he would talk about outside of the ring?
Yeah, I must have lived, ran around with a crowd that
only paid attention to him as a boxer.
Yeah. I mean, as not just a boxer, he was bigger than life to us.
Sure.
But the draft dodging thing didn't affect us that way. We saw what he was doing. Again, you got to understand, when he did it, a lot of the country was saying the same thing.
Right.
There was a lot of young men in America that were dodging the draft and didn't want to go fight in Vietnam. And so that conflict to that group wasn't there. But, I mean, you know, everybody reacted differently to it. I just wasn't in the group that was more offended by
The fighter,
right?
And how dominant he was.
Yeah,
and he was dominant. There was
by 10,000 miles. Sure.
The only person who was as dominant as him for any amount of time was Mike Tyson. Is that true? Tyson was definitely dominant for a shorter portion of time.
Yeah, shorter portion. Yes.
Yeah.
But Tyson was like a brawler. Tyson.
Oh yeah. No, they're not comparable at all.
Yeah, you know, there was Muhammad a style to pretty, Muhammad Ali.
Yeah.
April 28, 1967, Muhammad Ali refused to be inducted in the U.S. Army, immediately stripped of his heavyweight title. Wow. Ali, a Muslim, cited religious reasons for his decision to forego military service. Born Cassius Clay, Louisville, Kentucky, January 14, 1940.
That makes you smile, just saying that out loud.
He's
a hell of a dude.
I just love Muhammad Ali.
Yeah. We have Ann on the line. Ann, Carms and Collins, 720 WGN. You have an Ali story?
Yes, I do. I worked at O'Hare Airport. I don't know what year, 80, something like that. And Cassius Clay, Muhammad Ali came through there in the gift shop. And I asked him, Mr. Ali, could you be up my boyfriend? And he laughed and he said, he just laughed. And I said, I laughed too, so. He was a real easygoing guy.
Really nice, easygoing guy. That's really cool. And
okay. Yeah.
Thank you so much for the call.
March 8th, 1971, Joe Frazier, Muhammad Ali, Madison Square Garden, New York City.
Mm-hmm.
Ali, at that point, he didn't have the heavyweight title, which he had won against Sonny Liston. but it was the reason for that decision, which added the cultural significance to what would be a magnificent fight. Smoking Joe, it was undefeated, two-belt champion, and Muhammad Ali, who had been banned for 3.5 years, which, by the way, he was banned during the prime of his career.
Right.
Like, the public was robbed of seeing, I mean, his the amount of titles that he has would be way more if he had been allowed to fight in his prime. And also seeing him box, like, at his peak. So when he came back, he wasn't as fast. He was 3.5 years removed. I mean, you're taking somebody out of there. I mean, that's a huge amount of time off. But,
didn't matter.
No, it didn't. But the rivalry with Frazier.
One of the greatest sports rivalries of all time.
The thrill in Manila. Mm-hmm. Oh, my. I just. I mean, I don't know. I really don't know what that was like to be.
To be around when it was happening.
I mean, we.
There's no comparable athlete outside of Michael Jordan, right? And I know it's a completely different sport.
And it's just different because it's one dude in the ring.
Right. Yeah, he's not a team sport. It's one guy. And he stood for a lot of things. Mike, give him credit. He didn't have to, you know.
Well, and that's the opposite. That's where if you compare him out. Like, Charles Barkley speaks out.
He does.
And there's plenty of other athletes who will speak on issues. And, like, even LeBron James, like, has made a couple of somewhat he's talked about gun violence as of late via Twitter, but nobody in the history of athletics has ever been out in the forefront like Muhammad Ali was.
No.
Not only leading his sport, but also leading cultural
right.
change. I mean, I don't think the guy can be celebrated enough today, to be honest. I just,
from the 847, float like a butterfly, sting like a bee, rest in peace, Ali.